Okay. So do we need to repeat the roll call?
Probably, yeah. I can do it this time if you want. I'll just read
okay.
it right off.
Okay, let me just open it up with the date, and then you can do that, okay?
Yeah.
So, okay. So, sorry, everyone. So, welcome, everyone, to the April 24th, 2019, 9/11 and Other Deep State Crimes teleconference call. And, again, I want to thank Ann Hendricks for being our secretary for and taking the minutes for us tonight. And then, Craig, you'll take the role.
Right. Okay. So, I think
somebody
just
have... came on, I think.
Yeah. Is that you by any chance, Dominic? No. Okay, we're hearing sounds. We don't know what they are. Okay, so we have Ann Hendricks, Barbara Honegger, Barton Bruce, Bonnie Faulkner, Kat McGuire, Cheryl Curtis, Craig McKee, David Cole, Dave Meiswinkle, David Rold, Doug West, Frank Tolopko, James Hufford, John O'Malley, Carl Golovin, Ken Freeland, Lynn Bradbury, Marty Hopper, Peter Ketchum, and Sheila Casey.
And on the on Xander, Xander Arena.
Page three, yes, and Xander Arena. So that's that. So we got the role.
Okay, great. So let's see. All right. So now we go to the minutes of the last meeting of the March 27th meeting. Are there any amendments to that meeting, or goes as is? We're hearing none. We'll take the.
No,
what's that?
This is David Rold. I have an amendment.
Okay, David.
Yeah, well, I wrote to Craig, and Craig didn't want to include this, but on that Dark Overlord topic, the minutes say that Dark Overlord has in its possession documents that could be of great interest to the 9/11 truth movement. But on the call last month, I and other people expressed a concern that these Dark Overlord documents are disinformation. I mean, it's an anonymous source that's trying to implicate the Saudis and Pakistanis in 9/11, which supports the official story that it was Muslims who did 9/11 and not only Americans and Israelis. So I'd like something about that included in the minutes, but Craig said didn't.
Okay, so are you making a motion to that effect that we amend them?
Yeah.
What you're stating?
I guess to leave them and then say several people on the call expressed the concern that the Dark Overlord are the supposed Dark Overlord documents are just info from this anonymous source.
So you would like, you're making a motion to amend them to state that. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Is there a second to that?
I'll second it.
Barbara. Okay. Okay. So I'm going to propose that we keep the debate on that at the end after our two speakers have spoken, just because I think in courtesy to them so they don't have to wait. Because, you know, our discussions can go on sometimes a long time. Is there any objection to that? No objections? Okay, hearing none, then we'll put that on the agenda after the two speakers have spoken, and we'll debate that. Okay, any other? So then we'll just do everything then on the minutes, and we'll just move on to the agenda. Are there any amendments to the agenda?
Can you just tell us what the agenda is, please?
Yes. All right. So we're going to start out with hearing from Dominic DiMaggio, and then we're going to hear you, Barbara, and then we'll address the minutes to the meetings for February and March.
Oh, so that's it.
Ella, and then there's announcements. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So hearing no
objections. The amendment would just be that if he doesn't come on, I go first, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think we actually need to make an amendment for that. I think that
okay.
would kind of sort of happen automatically, I think.
All right.
Okay, so we can move on with our speakers? Okay. All right, great. So, Craig, would you introduce our first speakers, Dominic DiMaggio?
Well, I think our first I don't think he's on the call yet, unless I'm mistaken. Dominic, are you here?
Oh, he's not. I thought I saw him come on. Okay.
Well, maybe he did.
Well, I'm not seeing any unidentified numbers on our website, and I'm not hearing him respond. So, Dominic, you're not here, are you, Dominic?
Guess not. Okay.
I think I should keep asking the question until I get a yes, no matter how long it takes.
All right. So I don't think there would be any objection since Dominic is not here to have Barbara present first. Any objections to that?
By the way, I have no problem if he comes on, you know, if somewhat into mine to just, you know, I can let him go and then come back on if you want. It doesn't matter.
Ma, I think we should go through yours completely and then do his completely. But thank you for being willing to do that. Okay. So anytime you're ready, Barbara, I don't think you need any introduction. You're going to be talking about the Pentagon and challenging Chandler and Costi's views, from what I understand. So take it away.
Right. Well, that's part of what I want to talk to everybody about. I've been thinking about the best use of the time. And I will let you know that it was my plan to have my video that I'm going to put out before the Denver conference, critiquing, it's a detailed critique or peer review, if you will, of the 35 and a half minute so-called overview Coste-Chandler video. I have now completed that with Hamuk. I think a lot of you guys know Hamuk, right? So we're a really great team. And I had hoped to have it done earlier today so everybody could have it, but he's doing the final edits right now. So it wasn't quite done in time, which was my whole, you know, that was supposed to be my formal presentation to do snippets of that, which isn't quite ready. But so what I'd like to do, if it's all right with everybody, is to give you an overview of why Bonnie and I are going. Well, I can only speak for myself. I'd like to hear during my segment from Bonnie as well, because we're going together. We decided to go together to the Denver conference. So I want to tell you about why I'm going and what I plan to do there. But probably more importantly, because I didn't know about it when I asked to do this this segment, which was about, you know, because the conference is coming up on May 4th, which is just around the corner. What I'm about to tell you, I didn't know about yet. It hadn't happened yet. And there are some developments for the anniversary that I'd really like, because time is of the essence, really. It's already May, almost. And, you know, I'm one of the organizers of these events, and I really would like to get people's input to let you know what's being planned in broad brushstrokes that we already know about, and at least as part of this time that I have here, about 15, 20 minutes, whatever you want, is to give you that overview as well as talk a little bit about the conference, because I didn't have my video quite ready, but it will be soon, I would say within, I don't know, 24 hours, something like that. So which would you like me to do first?
I think whatever you're most comfortable with, Barbara, just...
okay.
Point of order?
Yeah,
so my understanding was that you're going to spend some time here refuting the Costi and Chandler position. Is that correct, Barbara?
Yes. I did that in a video...
I'm talking about on this call. This is what you're going to do on this call, correct? Because that's what the agenda says.
Yes, in part. But I'm letting people know that there's some breaking news.
I just want to make sure that you're still staying on that same topic, because that's what I'm here for. So go ahead. I'm sorry. Thank you for the clarification.
As I said in my little intro, there are two parts to what I'd like to present. So I think, Cheryl, shall I just do it in the order that I...
Yeah, that's fine.
Well, I'd like to get out of the way, because I think DiMaggio might come on and then he could have his talk and I could have mine second, like planned. So let me just give you an overview of the events, which everybody is going to want to know about. The thinking about planning and what we already know. So the bottom line is that for the last 2 years, I have basically produced the two big events for the 9/11 Truth Movement, involving not the A&E event in D.C. last year, but the two big events in New York City. There wouldn't have been major events in New York City if it hadn't have been for my organization, which took months, and my personal time. I'm not going to be doing that this year because I've been invited to speak at a big Zurich conference with Professor Daniel Ganser and Mick Harrison and Richard Gage and myself and Jane Clark and some other speakers. So I'm going to be in Zurich, and I'm not going to be doing that. So what I want to put out is people need to be thinking about who's going to be the champion this year. It's really important. I don't think it's enough just to have a New York City TAP event. They tend to be kind of spiritual, touchy-feely things, which is fine, but it's not substantive like the substantive events I've put on in the last 2 years that I won't be doing this year. So, you know, I will help people, anybody who wants to step forward and be a champion for an event in New York City. I'll tell you about D.C. here in a minute. We need somebody to do that. We really do. Right now, there is no event planned that I know of for New York City because I'm not doing it this year. So for D.C., what we do know is that Richard Gage and Architects and Engineers, I don't believe the Halsey Report is out yet. It's supposed to be out imminently as we're speaking. So once it's the draft Halsey Report plus the simulation, and as soon as that's out, of course, that's going to be the focus of Architects and Engineers and everything they do. What they are going to do, regardless, in Washington, D.C., they're planning on September 11th itself, which is a Wednesday. They're planning to hold an event that anyone can go to, but it's only an A&E event. In other words, it's not going to be a joint Lawyers Committee an A&E event or a joint TAP an A&E event, just an A&E event. And they're looking for one or more, probably one, engineering department with graduate students where they would present the final Halsey Report. It would be the unveiling of the final Halsey Report, which they expect in August, after between and a few days from now, if it hasn't already happened, and mid to late August, they are putting it out for what they call general and peer review. So that's the big event for A&E. And right now, they're only planning to have one, and that's in D.C. on September 11th, either for 3 to 4 hours in the morning or 3 to 4 hours in the afternoon. So the Lawyers Committee, which I'm on the board, we've got input from Richard Gage, and we've talked about possibilities. And, you know, it would be good to hear what people think is most important. So the two major possibilities for a Lawyers Committee event, like we've had, but like I put on last year, it could either be in D.C. or in New York City. The thing is, because Richard Gage wants to speak at the Lawyers Committee event, then it makes sense that we would hold our event the same day that A&E holds theirs, presumably on Wednesday the 11th. So if they hold theirs in the morning, we would hold ours in the afternoon or early evening. Or we would, the Lawyers Committee would put on our event that Richard would speak at, like he did last anniversary in New York City. The one I put on, he would speak at our Lawyers Committee event, but it would not be a joint sponsored event. It would just be Richard being a speaker at a Lawyers Committee sponsored event, Lawyers Committee organized, that produced and sponsored event. So right now there will be two events, one A&E on the 11th, morning or afternoon, and one, we expect, a Lawyers Committee either on the morning or afternoon that they don't, on the 11th or on the 10th, but then that still leaves New York City. So I guess I have a question as we go forward with planning, because you have to do it months in advance. I'd like to get an idea from everybody, like maybe a poll or something. If we had to choose, now maybe we could do both, but it's less likely. if the Lawyers Committee held an event that Richard Gage spoke at, maybe other speakers as well, would it be best or better to have it in D.C. or in New York City? And, of course, the decision probably, hopefully, would be made closer to the event if there's some kind of breaking news, hopefully positive news, with either the petition in New York City or our recently filed FBI lawsuit on March 25th in D.C. So I'd like to have, we're working on this. I'd like to have people's input on it.
Barbara, is it all right for you if we hold that off till Q&A after you've given your whole talk and then people give their opinions on that?
Yeah, that's fine. Mm-hmm. That's
okay,
fine.
That's great. That's great.
Fine. Yeah, and if people have any other ideas. Okay, so the other events that I know of on the other event that I know of that's a major event is being held in Zurich. They tried to get the venue as the World Trade Center in downtown Zurich. And the organizer, his name is Eric, originally got a contract or an agreement. I don't know if it was verbal or written. But yes, you could hold it at the World Trade Center. And then they found out what the topic was and they canceled. So they're looking for a venue, but they will find a venue. One way or the other, they will find a good venue in Zurich. It's going forward. The keynote speaker is Professor Daniel Ganser. It's an all-day conference on the 11th. I think it starts at 1, with a time difference, it's 9 hours from where I am. I guess it's 6 hours from the East Coast. It starts at 1 p.m. on Zurich time. Continental time in Europe, and it goes until about 8 to 8:30 p.m. So it's, basically a full day. And so Professor Ganser will be speaking. Richard Gage will be speaking by Skype or, Google Hangouts or something, or Zoom, because he's got to be in D.C. on that day, but he will be participating. And Jane Clark and myself and Mick Harrison will be speaking on behalf of the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry. Mick will be speaking he's certainly invited to go, but so far Jane and I will physically be there. Mick right now has agreed to, like Richard, speak by remotely because we expect him to be our main speaker along with Dave Meiswinkel, who's on this call, either in a Lawyers Committee organized, produced, and sponsored event in D.C. and or New York City that day. So that's the other major event. There are other speakers, Captain Dan Hanley, which some of you may know about. He was a pilot who basically told the truth about 9/11 and was fired and retaliated against hugely. He's going to be speaking. Eric himself, the organizer, worked for Swiss Re and has information, very critical information, about the insurance. I believe Swiss Re was one of the insurers. I don't know if it was of Larry Silverstein. I'll have to double check. But he says he has, really explosive information, and he's trying to get out of a gag order that he signed when he worked with Swiss Re. So far, they're not allowing him to talk, and he's thinking about talking anyway. There are some other speakers I'm not thinking of right now. Anybody? He would like to try to live stream that conference. They're definitely going to videotape it. So Richard Gage will not be, he just told us, will not be live streaming the Architects and Engineers event at the engineering department at some university in the D.C. area, they hope, on 9/11 itself on Wednesday. And I doubt that the Lawyers Committee will be live streaming our event. It was terrible quality last year, and it wasn't worth it. So those are the ones that I know about. So you want to put off, discussing all of that and having input to the end?
I'd like to do that, yeah, Barbara. It's a little bit cumbersome otherwise.
Okay.
So if you could, okay.
Yeah, no problem. Okay. So, I'm not going to apologize for not having my video quite done yet. It's the production problems were incredible. We had to do it twice because the Google Hangouts didn't take, and I had every intention to have it ready for you to have actually seen, and we could talk about it and at this. But what I thought I would do is I have a script for it. And even though the script is much longer than this, this segment, what I thought I'd do is let you know where I'm going. Here's the script. So, Bonnie and I decided to go to the conference. I'm going to the conference because I'm outraged at the one-sidedness of it. And I'm also outraged. I'm personally outraged as well as, you know, professionally outraged as a serious researcher about the Pentagon. What I just have to tell you, I believe that this is disingenuous behavior by these people. And in the process of doing my rebuttal or peer review or critique or whatever, that Homuk is finishing up the video right now. It'll be put out. I'll give everybody the link as soon as I have it. In the process of doing it, you don't really know everything that you know until you write something down. And in the process of rebutting this 36-minute video, or 35-and-a-half-minute video, which is Coste did a 5.5-hour screed, and everybody knew that nobody was going to watch 5.5 hours. So then David Chandler came along, and David Chandler divided it up into 16 or 17, originally I think 16 segments or quote chapters, unquote, and narrated them. But they're also incredibly unwieldy. So now what they've done, and it's a good idea, and it made my job a lot easier doing the rebuttal or the critique, is that they now have a 35-and-a-half-minute so-called overview that does touch on each of the 16 or 17 chapter areas. Okay. So what I've done is to rebut everything. And in the process of doing that, I have found that I have to tell you that I believe that Wayne Coste has outright committed fraud in many, many places in this video. And I'm going to be exposing those, will in detail, in the video. I'm going to be taking the video on DVDs to the conference. I'm going to be passing them out. The video will also be put out ahead of time. It wasn't me. I've never asked to speak there, and I know that Craig, you know, was asked by somebody I can't remember on our list to speak, and decided that, you know, it was a waste of time. I didn't ask to speak. Certainly, it would be a waste of time seeing who the speakers are, and that they're all on the same page supporting what I call official story lie. What did happen is that there is a member of the Europe TAP group, which I'm also on those monthly calls. There was one just yesterday that I was on, the monthly call. And I forget which one. It was a lady. But she CC'd me on an email to David Chandler asking if I was going to be speaking and hoping that I would be speaking and that, you know, really kind of a Pollyanna-type email. Isn't it wonderful that you're having a Pentagon conference and we can air all the different views and all of this? And he got back and said, well, you know, Barbara's welcome to submit a Q&A card at the end. Okay. So this is where they're coming from. They're asking for a whole bunch of money, I think $15,000 or something, to bring Warren Stutt all the way from, I guess it's New Zealand, to give his presentation. I'm going to be diplomatic, but I'm going to be really firm there. I'm going to take every opportunity I can. I'm considering renting a room in the hotel where we're all staying. Bonnie and I are getting there a day early. We're getting there on the 2nd. The conference is on the 4th. And I'm thinking about renting a room in the hotel, which they have lots of them, you know, the conference room, and showing the video and having a discussion and inviting everyone the day before or maybe the morning of for breakfast or something. I'm not going to interfere with their event. I'm just going to be in the audience taking notes and do whatever, you know, they allow anybody in the audience to do or not do.
Point of order.
But I really think, hello?
Point of order.
Yes, what's your point?
Yes, I understand that this particular part of the agenda was refutation of the Wayne Costi Chandler position, and I have not heard a single thing except for some name calling regarding their points of contention. And so I would like to know whether we're going to actually hear anything about that or whether we're just going to hear more talk around the issue. It's been
Marcia
said before for half an hour.
I am going to tell you, you cannot script another person, Jim.
It's not a script. It's a question of staying on task, on the task.
Ken,
and the task is refutation.
Ken,
okay. Yes.
Ken, we're all friends here. Please let Barbara continue.
I raised a point of order. I raised a point of order. And the question is whether she's going to actually refute Costi or not. That's the question.
I've already told you, Ken.
What did
I'm refuting. I'm refuting the Costi Chandler 35 and a half minute video in detail in my video, which will
on
be available
this call. On this call.
I intended it for this call, Ken. How many times do I have to tell you? All right.
Okay.
So, Ken,
I think she said this is what she's doing. She's just explained it to you. So, Barbara, please continue.
Okay. Well, anyway, I'm just letting you all know that I think that this needs to be seriously confronted, and it needs to be done right. So I'm looking for input from people as to what, you know, you think is a good strategy. And personally, I don't think that good strategy is to do nothing. I think we need to do as much as we can. I don't know if it was on this list or another, but Duane Dietz, and I know this is the case, Duane Dietz sent an email in which he said explicitly, when asked what's the purpose of the conference, that the purpose of the conference is to he didn't say it in these words. I could send you the email if it wasn't on this list. But the bottom line is they're trying to frame the whole Pentagon issue for future lawyers committee actions. And he said so. And I think that that's a very dangerous thing for this particular group to be doing, the way they cherry pick things. And all of that will be explicit in my video. So anyway, that's the presentation I have. I apologize for, you know, at least I'm here. DiMaggio isn't. and it won't be long. Hamas he apologized to me for not having it done as soon as we had hoped. And it won't be long before the link will be out and everybody can give me their feedback.
Okay. Great, Barbara. Then we'll go into Q&A mode. And if anyone, there's two things that Barbara's looking for. You're looking for feedback on September 11th events, as you discussed, and also how to confront this group, their views on the Pentagon.
Well, about the conference in particular, because, you know, and I'd like to know if anybody else is going from the call. Bonnie and I are going, and we're on this call. I'd like to know if anybody else plans to go.
When is it, Trevor?
It's May 4th. I believe that's a Saturday because I think I fly on the 2nd, which is Thursday.
Okay, so we'll go to Q&A mode. And please, *6 if you'd like to comment. And Barbara, you're unmuted now. Okay. So if you'd like to comment,
okay.
*6, please. Okay.
I'm sorry, what?
No, I'm just announcing to people if they want to comment to push *6. Okay, so we have people in line. Bonnie Faulkner, you're first. Go ahead.
Oh, this is Bonnie Faulkner. Is this me?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm on.
Hear you.
What I wanted to say, and this is not about the conference, I apologize, it's about the events on September 11th. Here in Oakland, California, we have our annual, I say we, it's actually the 9/11, the Northern California 9/11 Truth Alliance has a 9/11 film festival yearly, and this year it's going to be on Wednesday the 11th. Now, I talked to the organizer this year, Carol Bruyer, and she went over some of the stuff with me. Ken Jenkins will probably have some kind of a presentation from this Pentagon conference that Barbara has been speaking about. Now, I made the point to Carol that the people that are actually doing something about 9/11 are the lawyers committee, okay? I mean, the rest of it's all talk. So I gave her the contact information for Dave Meiswinkle, Mick Harrison, Barbara Honecker, and Richard Gage, because they work as a team. And I said, I don't know what they have planned in New York or elsewhere, but there should be some sort of representation at the film festival here in Oakland, because the lawyers committee and AE and 9/11 Truth are actually doing something. So I think I got it. I saw an email, and I think she may have contacted Mick, but I'm not sure. So I wanted to. I meant to call Barbara about this before, and I haven't done it, but I need to put that into the mix just so you guys know that there should be some representation at the film festival.
Well, that could be problematic, Bonnie. I'm going to let Dave Meiswinkle speak in more detail, because he's our president. I'm on the board, but he's our president. And I do know that our last Lawyers Committee board meeting was really focused a lot on the upcoming anniversary events, because I announced everybody I'm not organizing another one this year, that I'll be speaking at an event in Zurich. And Mick did mention that he had been invited by Carol Brule, but we understand that it's very important for the Lawyers Committee to put on our own event, and that almost certainly will be in New York City and or Washington, D.C. on the very day of the film festival. So that would preclude Mick being there. Now, I don't know if you can be piped in, like, you know, Richard is being piped in and Mick is being piped into the Zurich conference. Will they have a way to do that, or they want somebody in person?
I have no idea. I'm sure they would prefer someone in person as a speaker, but I don't know.
And is it on the 11th, Bonnie?
Yes.
Okay, well, I can't speak for anyone else, but I doubt Mick will be there.
Okay, is that it for you, Bonnie? Is there anything else you'd like to add? Okay, thank you very much. Marty Hopper, you're up next.
Hi there. This is it's Marty Hopper from Colorado. I think I'm next.
Hi, Marty.
Hi, Barbara. How are you?
How are you?
Good. So because I'm part of the leadership team for Colorado 9/11 Truth, and we're hosting the event that Barbara's talking about, so I thought I can give some more information and a bit of perspective, at least from my point of view, about the event. So the event will be it is a Saturday, May 4th, in Denver. It's from 9 a.m. to 5 o'clock p.m. The cost is $20, and people, you can get more information. We're not actually sponsoring the event. We're kind of hosting it, which is a fine point. Fine point detail. It did mean something to our group because we're not necessarily in agreement with the information being presented. But our feeling is that it's important for people to be able to present the information, let people attend, listen, and decide for yourselves, not shut down the information, whether it's Barbara's point of view or or this particular group. You can get information on scientists. I think it's scientistsfor911truth.com or .org, and purchase tickets there. And the agendas, they're on the website, so you can look at that as well. Detailed agenda, it will be, I think, a presentation of this, the 35-minute video that Barbara is talking about and planning to rebut. And then Ken will be presenting and talking about why is this such a controversial issue in the movement, and addressing some other points there. And then
Marty, which Ken? Ken Jenkins?
Ken, yes, Ken Jenkins,
yeah.
Sorry. Then following lunch is on your own, and then the rest of the group will be presenting, Wayne and David and the various scientists who will be attending. Will be presenting. So that's the basic outline of how it will be. Barbara is correct that questions, the Q&A, which will be at the end, will be on cards only. There will not be an open mic Q&A. So she's correct about that. Some of you may wish to submit, if you're not attending, maybe you could wish to submit a question remotely. So that's a possibility as well. Obviously, like any conference, they won't get to every question. There will be, Barbara, if you're going to have a DVD of your rebuttal, please bring that to the conference, because I know there will be a table for materials like from other researchers like yourself for anything you'd like to put out. We, again, would like to welcome that information.
Okay.
So there'll be a space for that. Also, the other space for conversation, since the Q&A is cards, is that the event will be followed by a dinner at Fran and David's house. And it will be an open event. Anyone attending is welcome to come. There's no charge. It'll be a catered dinner. And the intent is to just be able to talk to each other and engage in conversation and be open. We know it's controversial. We all have the same goal here in the end, and we'd like to maintain relationships and have a chance to converse. So that's the intent of the dinner afterward. So that's, I think, some of the overview. And also just, you know, Barbara, I know you're concerned about or saying, you know, there's a certain point of view being presented here, which I know you strongly and many people on this call disagree with. But just, you know, we also sponsored you coming out and presenting in Boulder and Denver and arranged, you know, that interview on KGNU with you. And it was just you. It was your presentation. It was your theory and research. And so it's not like I'm just pointing that out, that we have shut you out.
I didn't even think it, Marty.
Okay. Well, good. Well, I'm
all right.
Just I'm here. Maybe I'm reinterpreting, because you might get a room at the hotel, which is fine. Well, again, obviously, whatever you like.
Marty,
could
you wrap it up, please?
Yep. Okay.
Sorry, we're running out of time for.
I'm finished.
All right. Thank you very much. Okay.
Cheryl, just
yes.
To let you know, Dominic has joined the call. So,
hi,
Dominic.
Okay, welcome, Dominic.
So as soon as we're done with the Q&A, then yeah, we can switch over to Dominic. So he's ready.
Great. Okay. Thanks, Xander. You're next.
Yep, Xander's next. Okay. A comment, Barbara. There's an announcements period at the end of the call for all the stuff about 9/11 activities. I think that'd be a better use in the future. At any rate, regarding the Kosky thing, I look forward to seeing your rebuttal. I'm sorry to hear that we didn't get to hear any of the script tonight, and I appreciate the fact that you're going to Colorado to present a valid a separate assessment. Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you, Xander. Ann Hendricks, you're next.
Hi, this is Ann Hendricks. I agree with that, and we look forward to seeing your video, Barbara. My question is about Zurich. I did see Professor Glazier's one of his lectures to one of his classes, and could you tell us what the awareness and the interest is over there in Switzerland or Europe? What are you hearing? Action or awareness? What are you?
You mean
hearing
for 9/11? It's for 9/11, you mean?
Yes. Yes.
Oh. Well, the very fact that this conference is being put on, I think, is a very positive sign. I'm not sure if all of you guys are aware. I believe that it's open for anyone who wants to join in to the Europe 9/11 Truth Action Project, Europe TAP calls. They're like this call. They happen once a month. They happened the day before this one. I think it was 11 a.m. West Coast time, so 2 p.m. Tuesday yesterday was this month's April call. And they last for an hour to an hour and a half, usually like these, not as long as these usually. But they're packed full of information about what's happening in Europe. And the bottom line is there's a lot happening in Europe. There's not a lot. Everybody over there is waiting for the Halsey report. Let's put it that way. there's a lot. There have been a lot of preparations between the Europe TAP group and architects and engineers preparing for the rollout of the Halsey draft report, which I frankly expected. I expected it already, but it's imminent. It must be imminent. That it will be made public. Check Architects and Engineers' website every day. I'll ask Richard Gage for an ETA as well, and let people know if he can tell me more. I'll let the list know for 9/11 teleconference. The person who's putting it on, interestingly, I found that this is very interesting. Actually, you made me realize something in answering your question. I've now spoken last May, about exactly a year ago, with Richard in a tour in Europe and London. And I also was invited and did an Italy and Rome speaking tour a few years back. So I've met quite a few of these people who are on the TAP call. And what I find fascinating is that in each of these major cities, now this is true for I shouldn't say each. It's true for Rome, and it is true for Zurich. The individuals who are the organizers and kind of the leaders, and they're, in some cases they're just out there all by themselves pulling together lists and such, are Brits who live in Europe, which is interesting. I find that very interesting. They were born in Britain, and they've decided they prefer to live in Europe. I could go on and on about the details, but rather than that, I really highly recommend that people join this call. You're going to learn so much.
Okay, Barbara, are you ready for the next question then? Ann, did that answer your question?
Okay. How do we connect to the Europe TAP?
I will make sure that it's okay. Then you
Great.
Put out the invitation to the leader of it. His name is Jan van Aken. And then I will get back to you guys.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Okay. David Rold, you're up next.
Hello, this is David Rold. So I just quickly wanted to thank Craig and Barbara for letting us know about the concerns about the Pentagon conference in Denver. I don't usually go to the Boston 9/11 Truth Group meeting, but I went last week to let them know about the concerns voiced on this call, and everyone at most of the people at the meeting agreed, and the Boston 9/11 Truth Group decided not to endorse the conference. There had been a proposal, so that was very helpful. And although the people in the group don't all agree about stuff, we pretty much got closer together by agreeing to not endorse this conference. So thank you.
Right. Thank you so much. What was the name? What's your name? I'm not sure I know you. Who is that?
My name is David Rold, and I live in Massachusetts, and Humuk was at this meeting, and he called you during the meeting because we wanted to know what you thought of the conference. So.
Yeah, well, I know that, and I know that your group voted 8-2 not to endorse for the same concern that I have. But you did that without my input. I didn't even know.
Well, no, I'd heard you talk on the call in February, so I knew knew what you were going to say. But they wanted to call you because there was a rumor that you were going to be speaking at the conference, so we had to verify that you hadn't been invited to speak. So
I don't know who started that rumor.
Okay, thank you very much, David, for your question. Kat McGuire, you're up next. Kat, you're up next. Are you muted? Let's see.
And me after Kat, Cheryl, Craig?
Okay, yep. Kat, are you with us? You're not muted.
Kat? Sorry. Yes, sorry. Yes, I was muted. I apologize. Okay. This is actually a question, if it's possible, for the woman Marty. I would really like to know who is funding this conference, given that it is so one-sided. And not just one side or the other, but a multiplicity of sides. Where's the money coming from? This is a big event, putting it on a hotel, catering a big dinner for all to come. Does she have any idea who's funding this, please?
That's a question from Marty Hopper.
Yeah, I'm unmuting you right now. Marty, you're unmuted. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks. Well, there is, as I said, they are... there's a cost to go to the conference, which isn't real big. Also, the conference is not at a hotel. It's at a church. And the costs are very, very, very low for that. And like $200 or something to rent the church basement. It's not at a hotel. The hotel that Barbara was referring to is where we're suggesting people could stay if they want, and I think a block of rooms has been rented, so that's what that is. And since the scientists for 9/11 Truth are the ones putting it on, I'm not sure what the source of other funding is. So that's all I know. I'm sorry, I can't really answer the question real well.
Okay,
but it's not a real. Let's just say it's not a real expensive conference, and there has been a donor for Air Miles, so those are covered. The major costs often are travel, and people are staying in homes, so there aren't hotel costs. So that's what. So
okay.
It's not actually. It may sound like a big expensive conference, but actually, I don't think it is. So that's what I know.
That's good news because we need lots more of them.
I'm sorry?
That's good news. It's good news that you can put on a conference on a good budget. That's good news.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, great. So, well, thank you, Barbara, for your presentation. And let's move on
to
our next.
Are you forgetting my question?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm not even sure what question. It's more of a comment, I guess, on the conference. And Barbara, certainly, you know, comment on what I'm going to say, I guess. I mean, I find this conference to be, I mean, one side, I'm glad to hear some people saying some, and I thank David for his comments. I'm glad to hear people sort of seeing this for what it is, which is a completely one-sided conference put on by a group that has been kind of coming at this from one point of view for a number of years, and now they're putting on a conference, and I think even the word conference suggests that people are being, there's more than just a single point of view, but there isn't. There's just one point of view, and I will be, very soon, I'll be writing something about Wayne Costey's and David Chandler's presentation, particularly the chapter on Lloyd England. I've already done an article, sort of a first part of that, and the second part will deal with Costey and Chandler specifically, because I think their presentation on Lloyd England is not just wrong. I think it's fraudulent, and I'm glad that Barbara used the word fraud earlier. It's deceptive, and I will make that case. Yeah, I'll make that case for the Lloyd England thing, and I'm very looking forward to seeing your video, Barbara. And I think that there's a lot that could be said beyond that, but I'll just leave that there. And if you want to,
and by the way, I'm going to go on the record here. I'm a really honest person, and I know that all of us on the call are, but I try to be honest about everything, and I do not use the word fraud lightly. I was forced to that. And, you know, when you just look at somebody's video, I saw this. I tried to plow into the 5.5-hour video, and I gave up, which is the reason they did the 36-minute overview to begin with. But it's one thing to just watch it on a kind of casual basis, even with all the knowledge we have. And it's quite another to imagine that you're actually in a conference debating with somebody, you know, and that you're responsible for the positions that you take, and to reveal. I don't like the word expose, but to reveal the... I just have to tell you, these have to be conscious acts of deception. I can no longer give the benefit of the doubt. And you'll see why in my video.
Great, thank you.
Okay. Sheila, I see that you would like to ask a question, and we're really behind time, so if you can make it really quick, go ahead. Sheila, you're...
Yeah, this will be quick. This is a follow-up to Kat's question. To Marty. Marty said that there is somebody, a donor for the airline miles. I'm wondering if we could find out who that is. That's it. That's my question.
Marty, do you
anybody hear me?
Yes.
Am I unmuted?
No, you're... Yeah, we can hear you.
Oh, okay. Sheila, I don't know who that donor is, so I'm sorry I can't answer that question. If you could, I'm sure, send an email to David or Fran Shore, and I don't know if they've done that anonymously or not, but I cannot answer it.
Okay.
Okay, thank
all
you.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, and Barbara, thank you very much for all the details and the information and for going to the conference. And now
we'll report, Bonnie and I will, I hope Bonnie will be recording if they let her. And do some programs out of it, maybe. I don't know, but she could speak to that herself.
Okay, great. All right. So thank you very much again. And now we can we will go on to Dominic DiMaggio. And, Craig, you'll be introducing him.
Yes, yes. It'll be a fairly brief introduction, but Dominic is a researcher from Pennsylvania who decided at some point that he was going to do some firsthand research and to go to the Shanksville area and to speak to a number of people who witnessed something that happened on 9/11 with respect to what is alleged to be Flight 93. And he came up with some fascinating results from that, including, as he'll probably tell you, a conversation he had with the coroner. So without any more than that, I'll just hand it over to Dominic.
All right. Hello, everybody. I'd like to apologize for being a bit late. Sorry about that. I began this sometime, I believe back in 2007, and I started going out to Shanksville. I started using names I found in the press and created a list of witnesses. I identified about almost 60-some, and in the course of close to 3 years, I probably tracked down about 25 or so, maybe a little over 24 of them. And I started, the more witnesses I met, the more conflicting the story became for me. It became hard to try to piece together exactly what happened, and I thought this was rather a simple open and shut case. Like, I didn't think there was going to be so hard to figure out exactly what happened. One of the first people I actually talked to, and the video was online for a long time, was Susan McElwain. A lot of the videos I've actually made were actually taken off the internet. They were, I mean, wiped offline after last time I did a radio show and talked about this. Everything that went around and got scrubbed off the internet, and it's like impossible to find now, most of it. There are some clips out there, but the first thing Susan McElwain had told me about was this little white plane that she had saw, and I had asked her had she seen a commercial airliner at any point, and she did not, and she was about, I don't know, less than a quarter mile from the crash site, facing the direction of the crash site, when a small white plane came flying over her van, treetop level. It was real low to the ground, probably about 30 feet or so, and it cleared the tree line there, and she couldn't see it anymore, and there was explosion shortly thereafter. And Susan McElwain believed that this little white plane actually crashed. So she drove to her house, and she called 911. And she reported that she had seen a small plane crash. And this was kind of where my story began, was trying to figure out her story, because she was the first person that I met. It took me a while, actually, before I saw anybody who had seen a large passenger plane. Most of the witnesses I initially spoke with went outside shortly after the explosion had happened. Some of them had heard it. Some of them had felt the ground rattle. They were all within close proximity, and they all saw this white plane. And one of the videos that was online, if any of you were able to see it before, there was a witness. His name was Rick Cheney. He worked at the salt mill, which was real close to the site, and he said that a lot of people had actually going outside, and all they saw was this white plane after the explosion. I mean, this is immediately afterwards. And Susan saw it approaching the crash site, and after the explosion took place, other witnesses like Rick Cheney and people who spoke or worked at the salt mill had seen it. Viola Saylor, another witness I had spoken to, also seen the white plane after the explosion. And they all described it as this small white plane. This is not, absolutely not, a Falcon 20 corporate jet, like the official story says. That is one thing every single one of these people who witnessed this plane was 100% sure of. The ones I met in person, I showed them pictures of a Falcon 20 and said, is this the little white plane that you saw? And they were adamantly like, no, that is definitely not what I saw. So this kind of became where I got, I mean, almost obsessed, trying to understand what happened. And over the course of time, I did meet people who saw a large passenger plane. Again, one of the witnesses I mentioned, Viola Saylor, who saw the little white plane fly away. Before all that had happened, she saw a large passenger plane. It flew directly over top of her house at Lambertsville Road. And she did not describe it as nosediving out of the sky. Many of the witnesses, none of them actually, that I found who saw this plane ever described it as nosediving out of the sky. The main problem became, there's a group of witnesses at this place called Indian Lake. Now, if you go to Google and you pull up Indian Lake, Pennsylvania, what you will find is that Indian Lake is 3 miles southeast of the crash site. So this is the trajectory that this large passenger plane was on. If the large passenger plane doesn't crash in the field the way the government claims it did, then the direction it is heading, according to the eyewitnesses that I found and identified, is in the direction of Indian Lake. And so I began to look into Indian Lake because I had problems with the fact that none of these witnesses saw this plane nosediving. And again, Susan was a major witness because she should have seen this event happen. She should have seen this plane nosedive out of the ground. It would have been, like I said, she was less than a quarter mile directly south of the site. And when we got over the Indian Lake, we found all kinds of witnesses, and there shouldn't be any. And the documentary film, Loose Change, Final Cut, the mayor of Indian Lake, Barry Lichty, he's seen in there, and he's talking about how it came flying over his house. Now, he doesn't state that it's Flight 93, but he's saying that something that sounded like a missile or something came flying over his house, and that he confirms in the video that it's coming from the direction of the crash site. Like, it is not heading that way. It is coming from that way. And then his house was directly next to the Indian Lake Marina. And I talked to the person who was the manager at the time. His name was Jim Brandt. And an employee, John Flegel, who has a couple of videos online of people who have interviewed him. He's talked to the press and everything else. John Flegel believes that the plane had been shot down. The thing with John Flegel and Jim Brandt and the other two workers at the marina, Carol DeLasco and Tom Spinelli, is the one thing they are sure about, regardless if someone believes it was shot down or doesn't, whatever, is that this plane flew over them. They heard the engines roar. The plane was above the marina there. And another media story, there's reports of Indian Lake Golf Course groundskeeper, I believe his name was Chris Smith, who saw this plane fly over Indian Lake. So in order for the plane to ever be over top of Indian Lake, according to all the government data, that the only way this plane could ever be over here is if all the data is falsified and the plane does not crash in the field. So going back to the field itself and Susan McElwain, at one point in 2008, I believe it was, there was an arrangement made that I would meet with the coroner, Wally Miller. Now, let me state, before I went into Wally Miller's office, I hadn't figured all this out. It was driving me crazy. And I believed that a large passenger plane with 44 people was either shot down or, by whatever means, crashed in that field in Shanksville. It was the day that I met Wally Miller and spent about 2 hours in his office. There was video online. I interviewed him. He brought out a shoebox full of photographs. I probably looked at least 1,000 images. He got angry when I tried to film some of the images. And when I walked out of Wally Miller's office, I was 1,000% sure that a large passenger plane with 44 people did not crash in that field. What I saw in the coroner's office, I mean, I went in there, I was waiting for pictures of debris, of human remains, of something. The plane debris I saw was just tiny little pieces of scrap metal, and it was all a reflective silver color. There was no, absolutely no, large pieces where you would be like, oh, that's blue, or that's something that you could identify as being similar to United Airlines colors. It was all silver. And then human remains wise, I mean, you want to talk about absolutely nothing. I saw some bone fragments, tiny little bone chips that you can't look at and identify as being human at all. And perhaps two internal organs and one part of an arm from like the forearm to the fingertips of the left hand. And I mean, that was it. And I asked Wally Miller about, you know, did the FBI, did you set up any kind of, did you want to grade this, like set this up and mark it? Because I had talked to someone whose father was chief of police when the plane crashed out here in Aliquippa, Pennsylvania, and I believe that might have been 1994. But it had fallen a good 20-some thousand feet, and crashed in the ground. And that scene was like, I mean, it put people in therapy. As a plane crash would, you would imagine, that fell 20,000 feet to the ground. There were remains everywhere, he told me. He said that the ground was soaked in blood. Like, it was something that had put a lot of hardened people into therapy for a long time because of the way, they said there were the human remain parts that were hanging from trees, or you would see, like, the descriptions they gave me of what they found on the ground. Like, I mean, they literally said, you know, you're walking and suddenly you see someone's face on the ground. Like, it was just horrendous sounding. And what I saw, that Wally Miller's photographs were nothing comparable to that. Absolutely nothing. And then I confronted Wally Miller because he had been quoted in the press as saying he never found a single drop of blood at this crash site. And I had him confirm in my interview on video that indeed he could not find a single drop of blood. They never found a drop of blood. And when I tried to ask him, where'd you recover remains at? Were they inside the crater or were they outside the crater? He said, oh, you know, it was both. It was inside and it was outside. But when I went through the images, there wasn't a single photo taken of anything inside the crater, like any remains being documented or being removed or anything. Like, there are no pictures of any retrieval from inside of that crater, whether it be of human remains or body parts. And the main reason I'm going to say that is because there was no human remains or any airplane parts recovered from that 8-foot-deep hole in the ground. So that leads us to what caused the 8-foot-deep hole in the ground. And again, we go back to Susan McElwain, who saw this little white plane approach this site, and the explosion happened, and these other witnesses like Rick Cheney and those who worked at the salt mill, Dal Browning, I don't have all the names in front of me, I'm sorry, but who saw this little white plane afterwards. So this little white plane approached, and what it did is it caused the explosion. I can't tell you it shot a missile into the ground. I can't tell you it shot a target that was already pre-planted. I don't know exactly what happened. All I can tell you is, the one thing I like to tell people is I can't tell you exactly what happened on 9/11 in Shanksville, but I can tell you what didn't happen between 10 a.m. and 10:06 a.m. And what didn't happen was a large passenger plane did not crash there. It, in fact, flew over Indian Lake. Maybe it crashed somewhere else. Maybe it went and landed at an airport base or military base. I have no idea. This little white plane approached. When the little white plane was above the crash site or the alleged crash site, an explosion happened. The little plane stayed there for, I don't know, maybe about a minute or so circling around, and then the little plane flew away. And the rest, we're told, is a heroic, you know, battle took place and caused the plane to crash into the ground. And here's a transcript of a cockpit voice recorder that we recovered to prove that we're telling the truth, but no one has ever heard that CVR recording, because the whole thing right there, the whole let's roll story, is just the grand finale to the script. It's the let's rally these people to war. This is a staged pre-planned event. Like, as much planning into this Shanksville event, there was as much planning as there was for the Pentagon event and the World Trade Center event. Don't think for one second that what happened in Shanksville was like a throwaway. It was just, you know, like a last second, like, we're going to ditch this or we're going to wing this. Like, no, this part of Shanksville, as the other two events that day, was just as calculated, just as planned, as advanced. This is a military flight corridor. This is something the military was very familiar with. They put the planning into all the way down to the final, let's roll, the passengers fought back, now it's time for us to go fight back. So if there's some questions, because I know I kind of just blew through everything fast and rattled everything off, and I'm sure I left out, I definitely left out a lot of stuff, but if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer some.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Dominic. I really appreciate your presentation because we don't hear much about Shanksville, so I'm really glad you've done that. And we're going to go into Q&A mode now. Oh, whoops. That didn't work, did it? Okay. So star six, if you'd like to ask Dominic a question or have a comment.
I noticed, I don't know, I saw Sheila in the Q&A, and then when you read, okay, she's back in then, good, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe she might think she was in there and she wasn't, okay.
She wasn't, okay. Great, so let's start with Sheila. Sheila, go ahead. Sheila, are you with us?
I'm sorry. This is Sheila Casey. One thing I just wanted to ask Dominic to comment on is that at one point I had done some research into the idea that there were not actually any people on the plane. And one of the pieces of evidence that I came up with was that, if I'm out of breath, I'm out here walking my dog. One of the pieces of evidence I came up with was that, you know, there were considerable funds that were available to the families of those who died on 9/11. The Victims' Compensation Fund. I'm not sure of the total that they got, but I think it was something in the order of $1.3 million. And that for those who died in the towers, virtually every family filed for that money. And that for those who died on the planes, there were very few filings, most especially for Flight 93. What I recall hearing, I did do this research a long time ago and don't have it at my fingertips, but was that there were only two or three families of people who supposedly died on Flight 93 who filed for that money, which made me wonder whether the flight had actually even existed and whether possibly those passenger names were simply invented, as I know now so many things are invented. So I'm just wondering, I'd like to give Dominic a chance to comment on that.
Okay, Dominic? Oh, we have him muted. Just a second.
So sadly okay. Now, but are you there? Did you hear what I said?
Could you start from the beginning since you were muted?
Yeah.
Okay. I hate to use the term because it's been frowned down upon, but one of the things I realized or theorized, I should say, was that you see like the same three or four people trotted around in the media when it comes to Flight 93, and I started to kind of label theirs because it's always the same three or four, and they're always telling the same story, and you don't hear or see anything from any other alleged family members. And the one thing that the witnesses I spoke with, from Susan McElwain, the Viola Saylor on down the line, when I asked them was, has any family member ever contacted you? And every single witness had said, no, but you know what? People like you have. People who didn't have family members, who saw stuff, who were like, this doesn't make sense. What this person says doesn't make sense. It sounds like there was something else in the sky when there shouldn't be. Those people have contacted me. But never once has a family member ever come in contact with me. And I don't believe that there are any, like, you know, like I said, I don't know. I can't say the people whose names are on that so-called flight manifest that we've never seen. I can't say they don't exist, and I can't say that they are fake. But no family member has ever gone and contacted any of these witnesses to try to hear something other than what the United States government told them. And if I had someone who passed away in such a horrible way, in such a major event, and there were these contradictory reports from eyewitnesses, I would go and find these people myself, like I did without having that family member, and been like, what did you see? Because what you say doesn't make sense with what I've been told. And that leads me to believe, again, that like you said, that perhaps these family members don't exist.
Yeah, okay. I recall back, can I just make one more comment?
Sure.
That I recall that there was a woman of the man supposedly said, let's roll. I'm sorry, the wife of the man who supposedly said, let's roll. And she seemed to get a lot of media exposure. She was a very attractive, slim, blonde woman who always seemed to be well made up and had her hair done for every event and every picture and had three adorable blonde children. And I remember at the time, before I even knew much about what was going on, that it seemed a little odd. This is before I even, I remember seeing all this, before I even knew anything about 9/11 being not what we were told, that I thought that it seems a little odd for somebody who's going through grief to be looking so sparkly and shiny and well put together so soon after such a traumatic event. So maybe she's one of the people that you're referring to who was kind of one of the ones who always showed up in the media.
Yeah, I'm going to say most likely, because there seemed like there was only, like I said, like three or four, not even maybe four, I'm being a little generous in saying four, but maybe the same three people over and over and over again when Flight 93 comes up. Yeah, you get, I believe is that Todd Beamer's wife or Mark Bingham's wife? And then you get the one person is supposed to be his mother. And that's why I think it's like two wives and a mother is what they bring out. I can't say exactly which passenger they're supposed to be relatives of at this time, but it just seems like it's the same three people every single time. And that goes back to, I mean, we can fall back on the Operation Northwoods document as far as this goes, as what the plan would be, where they would create identities and they would pass these people around. And in recent time, the software is available to the public now, where you can generate a random human face. I mean, it's simple. So it would have been something the government easily had 20 years ago to generate a random human face, put a name to it, put it on CNN and Fox, and bring some agent out, CIA or NSA or whatever agent, and give them a new identity. And by the way, your job is now you are Mark Bingham's mother. Go out there and tell them how you're grieving over your son. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much for that question, Sheila. Xander, you're next.
Hey, this is Xander. I just have curiosity, in the pictures you saw with the coroners, was there any room in your mind for an actual large aircraft wreckage in the forest adjacent to the pit, or like additional breakup of aircraft somewhere in the vicinity but not where we were told?
I mean, I can't rule out that it crashed elsewhere. I haven't seen any kind of evidence to support that. As for what is nearby, and if you look at the images, and again, if you get familiar with the layout of the land, the blast trajectory, as you know, is into the woods directly there by the crater. That's on the west side of the crater, and Indian Lake is, again, to the southeast. And they talked about how there was debris recovered over at Indian Lake. I didn't see any photographic evidence to support anything being recovered at Indian Lake or New Baltimore. Again, if there was, the coroner definitely wasn't there taking pictures of it, but I don't believe there was. As for what there was adjacent to the crash site, I mean, it's tiny, it's small, I can't stress how small it is, this debris. Like, I didn't see anything there that a human being couldn't pick up with their hands. Like there's no large piece of debris that's going to take a couple people to pick up. I walked out of there unconvinced completely of a plane crash. In fact, going through his images and what I saw is what convinced me that a plane didn't crash there. So to answer your question, there was definitely nothing that I would say was a large enough piece of debris to be identified as being from a plane. There is a picture that the FBI used in the Moosawi trial that a lot of people are familiar with that shows like a piece of fuselage. It's you see the inside of the fuselage. You don't even see the outside so you can identify the colors. And it's just like one window. It looks like it's a decent-sized piece. But I didn't see that photographed anywhere in any of Wally Miller's photographs. And like I said, I looked at 1,000 of them, at least 1,000 of them. It was a shoebox. And so I would have to say no, that it definitely wasn't anything I saw that I would say, oh, that came from an airplane.
Copy that. Thanks, Dominic.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Okay, next, Ann Hendricks, you're next.
Hi, Dominic. Thank you so much. Your work is priceless, and we are all in the world is indebted to you. Thank you so much. My question, I saw on a video some people were mentioning a power outage at the time of the whatever they heard, explosion or thought or whatever. Did any of the witnesses you speak to mention power blinking or anything like that?
Yeah, I did. A couple did mention that, like, the lights flickered, like something had happened. They can't say it specifically. It happened right before or right after. But, like, at the time of the event, like, something, like, yeah, caused a lot of their power, just like the house, the lights flickered, the TV shut off, you know, like that kind of thing did happen, yes.
Have you put everything that you have done in a report?
No, you know what? I had released I released three interviews years back, Viola Saylor, Wally Miller, and Susan McElwain. I put together a couple of different short videos that ran about 10 to 15 minutes that had other witnesses in them, like Rick Cheney, Lee Perball. Lee Perball was the guy who actually was working at the scrapyard right by the crash site, and he was the only person who would have been in a position to actually seen a plane crash. I will state that Lee Perball does say he witnessed a plane crash there. He said that he saw the plane rock back and forth and then nosedive into the ground. Now, he was going to meet me at the crash site and give me an interview. He had agreed to do all this. I had spoken to him. And what's the guy's name? Jeffrey Hill, I believe. He had contacted me. He was a guy who was calling people and asking him questions about 9/11 and recording conversations and posting them on the internet. He had got a hold of Lee Perball and he had talked to him, and he knew that I was going out there to meet Lee, and he called Lee a second time, and he told Lee, you know, I recorded our conversation, and I put it on the internet, and blah, blah, blah. And Lee Perball got real upset, and when I showed up to meet him, he wouldn't meet with me. In fact, he threatened me with an attorney if I ever tried contacting him again. And that's a shame, because I don't know what Lee Perball saw, but I have a feeling from what I heard that if Lee Perball was going to describe something happening there, it was definitely not going to jive with the official story. But I do not believe that Lee Perball saw a large plane crash into the ground, because he's the only one that's kind of, and all the witnesses that I've spoken with, he's like the one that doesn't fit in. All the other witnesses kind of corroborate each other. Even though they don't know each other, their stories all fit together like a nice little puzzle. And I, over the course of the time that I did this, I was able to piece it together. Lee Perball was the one that just kept sticking out. Now, Lee Perball is someone who is ex-military, and he actually started there on September 10th on a Monday. It was his first day at work. Luckily for him, on September 11th, he just happened to be outside to see it. And shortly thereafter, Lee Perball was not working at the scrapyard anymore.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Cheryl, can you stick me at the end of the queue? Hello?
I'm here.
Oh.
maybe we're at the end of the queue.
Where'd everybody else go? Cheryl, are you there?
Tell me something weird happened when Dom's calling to talk about Shanksville, because I will not be surprised.
I wonder if Cheryl got bumped. No, she's there. Oh, no, she's muted. She's muted. Okay. Well, I think we can move to Bonnie. I'm not sure what the problem is, but let's see what happens when I do this. Okay, Bonnie, you're up.
Okay, good. You can hear me? This is Bonnie Faulkner?
Yeah.
Sorry, this is Cheryl. I got cut off the call, and I'm back on now. So.
Okay.
Sorry.
I just moved this to the next person on the thing. I figured that's
great,
what happened.
Great, thank you. Excellent.
I'd like to go at the end of the queue, by the way, just so you don't forget me.
Yep.
Okay.
Dominic, thank you very, very much. Very, very interesting. Last year at the 9/11 Film Festival in Oakland, I was on the podium making an announcement, and at that time President Trump was at Shanksville. And so I mentioned Shanksville, and I mentioned something that Webster Tarpley had said on my show. He said, well, if the plane buried itself, then bring it out, bring it out. And it kind of got a laugh. Later on in the lobby, Ken Jenkins, who's part of the Northern California 9/11 Truth Alliance, came up to me and he said, Bonnie, that's not right. You shouldn't have said that. That's not right. He said they did bring that plane back out. And he said, and the reason I'm bringing this up, Dominic, is because you said that if the witnesses that you talked to were right, then there was a falsified data. Because what Ken Jenkins then said to me, he said, all the data fits. It all fits together. They brought the plane out of the hole, and all the data fits. That's where the plane went in. And then he said, the problem is that people just don't do their research. They don't do their research. And so I would like you to comment on his comments. And I very quickly wanted to mention a book on Flight 97 that's quite good called Flight 93 Revisited. I interviewed the guy many, many years ago. It was quite good. I can't remember his name. But anyway, could you comment on those comments?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, of course the government data is going to fit. I mean, they planned this thing out. You know what I mean? This is what, I mean, look what happened after 9/11, from the loss of liberties to the never-ending war on terror to everything that's taken place. Yeah, their data is going to fit. When the evidence is being supplied by the perpetrators of the cover-up, like, it has to be seen as questionable and suspect. Of course, you know, people are going to provide evidence that's going to prove that they're not involved in something. Oh, I have an alibi. I was here or whatever. Look at this. Look at that. I mean, that's just natural. So the government is going to give all kinds of data for every one of these events that's going to show that they are telling the truth. But, I mean, of course, they're going to fake that data. It's absolutely falsified. Because if you go over and you look at the government data and you look at what they release and you look at their flight path and that, they never put this plane over Indian Lake. So I have to, as an individual, I have to decide that the people I met and spoke with who work at the marina there, the guy who was quoted from the golf course, the mayor who I saw in the loose change video, either they're all independently lying, and for even though they believe the official story and they don't question it, for some reason they just decided to invent putting a plane over Indian Lake. I mean, there's no reason for that. There's no, you know what I mean? There's nothing to gain from that. Like, they can easily just been at Indian Lake and heard the explosion and been like, yeah, I heard it, and we drove over to the crash site to see what had happened. But instead, they're all like, oh no, the plane flew over. And then we heard the explosion. Like, why would they all corroborate each other and say the plane flew over? So, yes, the United States government is absolutely going to give you false information, false data, to say that, oh, no, we're telling you the truth. You can believe us.
Well,
but,
exactly.
Yeah,
people use the government data to prove the government's case. I don't get it.
Yeah, I can't do that. I can't support that. I've never supported that. Whatever the topic is, I mean, we can talk about the World Trade Center. This isn't something I'm an expert, nor do I claim to be an expert on. Shanksville's my thing. But when I look at the World Trade Center, I look at what all the witnesses said, and they all described hearing explosions or like bombs going off. When I go to the Pentagon, I look at witnesses like the guys that CIT interviewed, and like their stories. And like I don't trust the government because I'm accusing the government of orchestrating this. So how can I believe anything that they give me?
Thank you, Dominic.
You're welcome.
Okay, and Kat McGuire, you're next.
Yes, hi, Dominic. Thank you very much. I would really like some show notes that have the videos and reports of the articles that you've done. So if the organizers could please put that forward, especially the one with Lee Perball, I'd really like to see those. I have a couple of quick questions. One is, I missed the site where you said there was all that those bloody remains as opposed to Shanksville nothing. If you could say where that site was again.
That was the that was a plane crash in Aliquippa, Pennsylvania, in I believe 1994. I think it was Flight 422. I could check that again real quick. But go ahead.
No, that's fine. Pennsylvania. Okay, no problem. I just kind of wanted the location. And two other questions. When you were interviewing people, you say that they accepted the official story. Did you find any of them were kind of, besides Perball, were kind of scared and suspicious and afraid to talk, or most of them were just guileless and had no problem telling you because they bought in the official story and didn't even realize that they were undermining it?
You know, I absolutely met people who were terrified. Like, there were people who one woman told me to call her back in 20 years when her children grew up, and she'd tell me all about it. Like, yeah, stuff like that absolutely did happen. I had some people tell me they didn't see anything. And then I explained to them, like, okay, well, the reason why I was calling you is because, you know, your name was quoted in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, this and that. And I met this woman, Susan McElwain, and they'd be, oh, I go to church with Susan. And I'd be like, oh, okay, well, this is what Susan told me. And they were like, oh, yeah, I did see that plane. Like, yeah, I know what plane Susan stuff. Like, their stories would change. Like, yeah, once they knew, like, they were talking to somebody who had spoken to other people and had heard a different story. Like, some people did get relaxed. Some people told me stuff under the premise that I didn't go post their name on the internet. There were people who were like, I'll tell you what I saw, you know, but you can't interview me, you can't film me, you don't record me. And so, like, there are things that I know for the sole purpose of I just knew it because someone told me information, but they weren't willing to go public with it or be identified. And over the years, when I've discussed this stuff, I've told people, you know, you're free to throw my information away because I won't identify these people who told me this. They told me this, you know, in confidentiality. But, yeah, there were definitely people who were afraid to talk, and there were people who wouldn't talk and didn't talk to me when I went through my name, my long list of witnesses. Like I said, the one woman I'll never forget, she said, call me in 20 years when my kids grow up. I'll tell you all about it. Mm-hmm. And that's when I kind of knew that, like, there was way more than what I even had an idea of at that time, because even if the plane had been shot down and crashed there, I don't think people would say, call me in 20 years and I'll tell you. Like, I believe they would have been like, oh, you know, they did shoot it down because, I mean, you had to. And that's kind of a belief I think everybody would agree with if 9/11 was true, as we were told. If you did have a bunch of people hijacking the plane, that would be as hard of a decision as it is to make. That would be the thing to go do, though. You would shoot it down. So, yeah, I don't believe naturally. If it did get shot down, it definitely got shot down and crashed somewhere else, but I don't believe that that happened.
Okay, a final question. I'm not really up to speed. I don't remember that much. Were there, like, funerals for all these supposed people? Were there any funerals ever? Do you know about funerals?
Not that I know of. I can't say, you know, they're going to say those people, those 44 passengers or 40 passengers, whatever it was. I mean, I'm sure they're going to claim that they had places wherever their hometowns were or whatnot. As for what happened in Shanksville, that there wasn't any kind of funeral for anyone in Shanksville now.
But nobody's really tracked down to see if these people who are supposedly dead actually were mourned in a proper funeral and burial.
Yeah, no one's definitely gone and checked that, no.
Is that because we don't have a full manifest?
I mean, we have a list of names. As for, like, an actual flight manifest, that's never been made public.
Uh-huh.
So all we have were the names mm-hmm. that were released by the government. And as we know, the government released 19 names of hijackers, and they turned around and said, well, some of them are wrong, and some of these guys are actually alive, and they never changed any of the names anyway.
Yeah. You just think that the funerals would be, like, a core place where they would, like, have all kinds of propaganda around these poor families crying and stuff. And I don't really remember it because I wasn't attuned to 9/11 until, like, 10 years ago. So I really didn't know about – surely there were funerals that they were able to propagandize to the hilt. And you're saying that for Shanksville, at least, there were no funerals.
Yeah, there definitely weren't any that I'm aware of that took place in Shanksville. I think the claim would be that, you know, remains were sent back to wherever the family's hometowns would have been and probably things done there. But I also think, don't quote me on this, but I also think, like, a lot of the Flight 93 passengers' names does not show up in, what is that, the Social Security Death Index or whatever that is, where a lot of people were able to confirm that. I don't think their names show up there. So,
Well, thank you very, very much. Great work.
Well, thank you.
Okay, and Nita, you're next.
Yeah, hi, this is Sheila Casey again. I just wanted to add one thing, or to answer one thing to Kat regarding funerals. I don't believe that funerals are really any kind of proof, because I feel convinced that Sandy Hook was staged and there were funerals for those children who supposedly died at Sandy Hook. And if you think about it, a funeral would not be a very expensive thing to stage. All you would have to do would be to rent out a church for a couple of hours, hire some people who wear black, hire a hearse and a coffin, and, you know, the expenses would be minimal compared to what they're willing to spend to put on these kinds of events. So I don't know about Shanksville at all, but unfortunately I don't think the occurrence of funerals really proves anything one way or the other. That's all.
Okay. Did you want to comment on that, Dominic, or?
I mean, I would agree with that. Yeah, like a funeral, I mean, you can have one for, I don't know, $3,000 or $4,000, which, I mean, what's that to the government when you're looking at what they're going to make in the long run? Yeah.
Okay. Right.
And anyways, there wouldn't be, there definitely, like, if a plane did crash and you did have a funeral, I mean, you're not going to have an open casket one anyway, so there's no way to confirm anyone, or you know what I'm saying? Like, not to get gruesome, but you're not going to know what's actually in the casket if they do have one and they do hold one. So it could all just be for show. But yeah, go ahead.
Okay, Barbara, you're next.
Yeah, hi, Dominic.
Don't forget me.
You want to go first, Craig?
Oh, I don't mind. I just wanted to make sure I didn't get forgotten. It doesn't matter. Whatever. You go ahead.
All right. Hi, Dominic. Thank you so much for everything that you're doing. Okay, so I have kind of three categories. The first one is to give you a piece of information you may already know about Shanksville, or alleged about Shanksville. But my first one is to, if you could clarify something. When you went over your kind of overview of the evidence and, you know, what witnesses told you and didn't and such, I'm confused as to whether, if I understand correctly, something that could have been like a passenger plane was seen, but what are you saying or believe happened to that first?
Okay, first, the passenger plane, yes, it was seen. It flew very low along the tree line, and it flew over that area where the crash is alleged to have happened, and it continued flying. It flew over Indian Lake, which was 3 miles southeast of the site. To kind of put things in perspective, to me, Indian Lake is like the opposite, the other side of the Pentagon. Like, if you had 20 people on the other side of the Pentagon who saw a large passenger plane fly over, like, we're done debating. Indian Lake is the other side of the Pentagon, and we do have witnesses there who do put the plane over it. Once it flew over Indian Lake, it began to ascend. There's actually, I think pilots for 9/11 Truth had some data that it's showing that it turned its transponder back on after it got to Indian Lake, and showed that there were hits after Indian Lake there. Where did it go from there? I cannot tell you.
Oh, okay, so just to clarify, nobody is saying or believes, who's trying to find out the truth, that plane crashed anywhere, whether it was at Shanksville or not.
I don't believe it, yes.
Okay. And then a piece of information, just for you to know, I don't know about following it up, but I was in San Diego with that great 9/11 Truth group in San Diego, and a former American Airlines flight attendant, Ginger Gaynor, is a really active person in that group, and I stayed at her house for a talk I was giving there on 9/11, and we went out to breakfast with David Ray Griffin and his wife the next morning, and for brunch, actually, and over brunch, she dropped the fact that David just really perked up with about, and so did I, that what she claims is, Ginger Gaynor, used to work for American Airlines, she claims that someone she knows personally, whose name I just know is Colleen, but, you know, she's protecting her identity, but that this person that she knows personally, who I believe had at some point some connection with American Airlines, that on 9/11, Colleen was an air traffic controller at Dulles Airport. And if I recall it correctly, I'm sure she'd tell you the story herself if you're interested, but, you know, I'm not going to get everything exactly right, but this is the gist that matters. That if I recall correctly, Colleen was, her chair as an air traffic controller with her screen was either next to or close to Daniel O'Brien, who is the one that we're at least told was tracking the alleged Flight 77 coming back, you know. What Ginger said is that Colleen told her that after the alleged, Pentagon crash, that they had means, and I'm not sure why, maybe they were tracking the C-130 that whose pilot's name was also O'Brien, interestingly. Maybe the reason that they were looking on their screens in the Pennsylvania area was because they were tracking the C-130. I don't know. But the C-130 pilot was actually the first so-called official, quote, confirmation, unquote, even though he didn't see an impact at all. His plane was facing the wrong direction at the moment of alleged impact. But he did then turn his plane around, the C-130, and fly back in the direction of the Pentagon and reported to, I think it was Reagan Air Traffic Control and the military, that it looks like, he said, quote, it looks, this is on the tapes, the NORAD tapes, quote, it looks like a plane hit the Pentagon because there's a big black smoke cloud. And then he went on to the Shanksville area, and amazingly, that same C-130 was the so-called official confirmation also of the official story alleged crash at Shanksville, also based upon this smoke cloud coming out of the ground or something. So anyway, the reason that I mentioned this is that we were talking about it at the table, and Ginger Gaynor said, oh, that reminds me, Colleen told me that after the alleged Pentagon attack, that it wasn't her, I don't believe, but someone else there had on their screen tracking in the area of Pennsylvania, I believe because they were following the C-130, but you'd have to confirm that, and that what they saw was a blip on the screen that they assumed and believed was Flight 93. Who knows? But it was like a blip that would represent a passenger plane. And that
then a smaller blip went in the general vicinity, which by its speed, maneuverability, et cetera, they believed was a military plane of some kind. And then out of that plane, two little tiny blips that they believed were missiles went from that smaller plane to the blip that they assumed was Flight 93, and then the big blip disappeared instantly when the two little blips got to it.
My comment on that would be, if that event took place, that event took place somewhere else. No one I spoke with who saw a passenger plane saw debris or smoke coming from it. Like, it seemed like it was perfectly fine and intact. And like I said, flying level right above the tree line as it was approaching that site. I guess my question would kind of be like, if we look at 9/11 for what it is as being an orchestrated job committed by the government, what purpose would they need to shoot down that plane? Wouldn't they pretty much have control of all the planes that day anyways? So why even shoot one down? If the only reason like a shoot down takes place is because the government's telling the truth and there's horrible hijackers hijacking planes and the government had no knowledge of it and they're trying to stop it from happening. And I don't believe that happened on 9/11. And that's why I don't believe I've ever found one person who witnessed a damaged airborne 757, whether it's smoking or it's losing debris. And again, like the witnesses who described the small white plane, when I spoke to them, you know, they kept telling me it appeared military. At the time that there was no commercial plane around, and when I asked them what kind of plane it was, none of them were able to give me a valid description. Susan gave a real good description on video, and I think if we listen to her description today and look back on it, that what Susan described sounds very much like a Predator drone. I think that's what we're looking at here, is a Predator drone. I don't think, like I said, there's anything that supports I'm not saying that the person who told you that didn't witness whatever they said they witnessed on the radar, but I'm saying if that did take place, that happened somewhere else. Perhaps the reports of a plane crash near Camp David that quickly disappeared were authentic. I don't know. But I know it didn't happen there in Shanksville.
Well, that's good. I'm not advocating for this. I'm just reporting. And then the last thing is, I don't know if you've been to the 9/11 Museum at Ground Zero, but in my 9/11 Museum virtual walking tour, if you don't have, I'll send you the link. I went in there with my, you know, high-resolution low-light camera and took pictures of everything that you weren't supposed to do, but I did it. And there's a photograph in there. In the small Pennsylvania Shanksville section, there's actually a kind of a map on the wall, and they claim in the official exhibit that the so-called debris field from the plane, it said started miles from the crash site. Now, you know, comment on that. Have you seen evidence of debris from any kind of a plane miles from the official story crash site?
I have not, no. I did go, one of the first things I did go to was New Baltimore. It's a place I don't talk about much because there isn't much to say about it. I went to New Baltimore. If 200 people live in that town, I'm exaggerating. It's extremely, extremely small. I stopped in at a local, at a gas station they had there. I stopped at a little bar they had there. And I just asked some questions because I had heard that, you know, there were reports on the internet, not, you know, just on internet forums back in the day and stuff, that they set up this retrieval site in New Baltimore and there was this other crash site. But none of the people that I spoke to in New Baltimore knew anything about it. New Baltimore would be a town where if something happens, everybody knows. Like I said, I mean, I'd have to look online, but if there's more than 200 people living there, I'd be shocked. As for Indian Lake, I didn't see anything. there is video where John Flegel is showing something that he claims is debris. He's got something, I mean, tiny in his hand. And he's saying it's washing up from the lake, and they believe it's debris from Flight 93. But, like, you can't, there's, I mean, I don't know what it is. Like, I can't say it is plane debris. I can't say that it's not. It is interesting to note that both New Baltimore and Indian Lake are the direction the plane was heading and not the direction the plane was coming from, and that the debris from the event there in Shanksville heading into the woods, blasting into the woods, is, in fact, the exact opposite way of those. So, I mean, could there be, like, small pieces of metal or aluminum or whatever, the shiny silver material I've seen heading off further into the woods? Yeah, it easily could be. How far could it go? I can't say. A lot of Wally Miller's photographs, I mean, they're not aerials. You know what I mean? It's just a guy walking around taking pictures of the ground. So I can't say this is 200 feet from the crater or this is 2,000 feet from the crater. But I think everything was concentrated in that general area. The witnesses, the media, and all that happened that day was set up between the crash site and Indian Lake is where they staged all the people. So there definitely wasn't a trail of debris heading that way or coming from that way, because they wouldn't stage all the people there. You know what I mean? Like, they'd be trampling on debris. So.
Yeah. Okay, one last comment, and that is Victor Thorne, who's unfortunately no longer alive, but he did a series of articles for, I think, American Free Press. Anyway, he did a series of articles, and I talked to him about it at the Pentagon conference about 4 years ago or so. He claimed that in his articles that he'd done some kind of gumshoe research, and that there was, he believed, some evidence that in the woods up the hill, I think he said in his article, from the alleged crash, actual official story crash site, that there was a separate, so-called real crash site, where there were FBI agents mucking around in the woods up there. You ever heard anything about that?
No, nothing. No witness I ever talked to ever described a different area being closed off or anything. No.
Okay.
And I mean, once we get there in Lambertsville, I mean, Lambertsville is a little bit north of it, but, I mean, that's kind of what the area really is. We call it Shanksville, but technically where this event happened is Lambertsville. No, like I don't think you could hide that from the locals. There's no way I believe that could happen. And, like, I went there and met people, and, like, none of them knew it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying, like, the person who said that is not being honest or whatever, but, like, I haven't found anything that confirms that.
Okay, thank you, Dominic.
Welcome.
Okay. And then, Craig, you have a question?
Yeah, just real quick. Actually, I think, Barbara, we're getting a lot of noise from your line.
You are?
Yeah.
It's showing up on our feedback, or someone talking.
Yeah, it's like feedback. Yeah, it's okay.
I'll take it off speakerphone, if that helps.
That might be good, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, quick comment on my part. First of all, I'm fascinated by that comment by Ken Jenkins. I was shocked by it, but not really that shocked, really. And I'm kind of wondering whether we're going to be treated to a conference in 2020 all about Flight 93 being dug up out of the ground. But we'll wait and see for that. But what I wanted to ask you, Dominic, is just to clear up in my mind the thing about the about the passenger plane. You mentioned the Falcon 20 being part of the official story. So that means we have a commuter plane that flew over, and then there was a separate sighting of a white craft of some kind that you think had played a part in the explosion. So do you think that am I getting this right? Is the passenger plane something you think was in the area to kind of provide an explanation for the other plane, sort of a plausible explanation for why this other plane was there?
You mean the little white one or whatever?
Yeah.
The passenger plane was it was there to be seen. It was there to be seen. It was there. So when people come around, And they're like, wow, what happened? People were like, well, I don't know. This large passenger plane come flying by, and a minute or two later, there was an explosion, so it must have crashed. Like, it's just a logical conclusion if you don't see, if you live in the area, and that's what you see is a large passenger plane come. You know what I mean? And then there's a big explosion, and everyone rushes there. I mean, it's only human to put two and two together and be like, well, that's what happened. I saw the big plane come by, and now there's an explosion. It crashed. Especially when, you know, given the other things that had happened that morning. Yeah, that passenger plane was solely there to be witnessed. That's what I believe.
And its transponder went off, you think, to plausibly appear to be a crash? Oh, no, it wasn't supposed to have crashed. Why did the transponder go off?
I don't know. That was something that Pilots for 9/11 Truth had put out where they had some data, and the data showed that at over Indian Lake, like, the thing turned back on, and it started to climb in altitude. It started to gain altitude over Indian Lake. And, like, when Rob Belselmo first got that information, he came to me, and he was like, hey, he was like, I think I have something that might confirm that you're right. And he explained to me what it was, and shortly thereafter, he put the article out with the information in it showing that this plane, whatever plane it was, turned a transponder on, and it started, as it says, squawking UA-93 or whatever, and it was about 8,000 feet. And climbing over Indian Lake.
Right. Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Okay. We have one more question. James, if you could make it quick, I would appreciate that.
Okay. This is James Hufford and First Dominic. I want to thank you for what you've done and for sharing it with us. And then my question is, you mentioned at the beginning about the radio interviews that you did that got squelched from the internet, and I'm wondering if you could possibly provide us links to any of those programs.
Yeah, I believe Craig, I had sent him the one with the most recent one I had done. It was Pamela Senzi. I had appeared on hers. There is a link. I can send it, or if Craig maybe can send it, if there's a group mailing list. And when they put the article up about, you know, me appearing on the show, they linked to all my interviews. They had the Wally Miller interview, the Susan McElwain, the Viola Saylor, plus a couple of the short videos I had put together. And it was after that interview that someone went around and got all of my stuff removed. Now, the interview you can still hear, and I don't know if it's part of the interview or not, but I do remember I talked to Pamela, and she had said that she had the audio of my full interview with Wally Miller, and she aired it. So it might actually be at the end of the link that I can send out here. So it might be included with it.
Yeah, if Craig or you could provide that, that'd be very helpful.
Yes, yes. And also, I got a few things put together. I think if you just pop up on YouTube, I'm actually, you know what, I'm sitting in front of a computer, so I'm going to type it in right now while I sit here and confirm this. But if you go to YouTube and you type in Wally Miller and you type in human remains and you search it, yes, the first hit is a 5-minute video. It's still up on YouTube right now. If you type in Wally Miller and human remains, you'll see there's a video, it's 4 minutes and 54 seconds, where I took some parts of the interview. It was kind of like something, while I was working on releasing the video, I threw this little 5-minute thing together to just put it out there that had a good chunk of information contained in it. You can go watch that. You can put that in right now and watch that as soon as you get off the phone. It's still
super.
Up.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Dominic. That's the end of the questions. And thank you so much for being on the call. And can't wait to look at some of your other stuff. So again, thank you. And now I'm going to take us off Q&A. And does someone want to say something? Did I miss something? No. Okay.
Okay, if someone has a dog barking in the background, you might want to mute yourself. Thank you.
What a dog.
Okay, so that brings us to the motion to amend the minutes from the February call. And that motion was already seconded. And I'm going to ask Craig to read the motion and then what the suggestion is to change it.
Right. So, yeah. Sorry? Did I?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Yes, so I'm going to read the motion. The motion was to make an amendment to the minutes from February, as Cheryl said. I'm just going to read, there's two sentences that are kind of implicated. I'll read those two just for context, and then I'll read what the motion is. It says, Sheila Casey was warned by facilitator Ken Freeland not to make personal attacks after she said that Chandler is not a truther and therefore should not be heard. Then we have the motion is to change the following sentence to remove the word subsequently. It was subsequently Sheila was removed from the call. So the motion is to strike the word subsequently and replace it with after she openly refused to accept this limitation of her discourse. So Ken will explain the reason for that, and I'd like to speak after him because it was me that preferred the minute, so I would like to speak first if possible.
Okay, great. So Ken, do you want to restate your reason for the motion, please?
Yeah, I suppose since it's another call and some of the people may not have been on the original when I made the original motion. But, the fact that Sheila was removed is mentioned, but the reason why she was removed is not, and that's a glaring omission. The fact that she was readmitted after the overruling of the facilitator means that people need to understand the reason for her removal. Otherwise, there's no understanding of whether or not the restoration or the rescinding of that action was in order. So that's just normal for minutes to support with accurate rendering the events that led up to an action prior to its being rescinded. Okay, it's very simple. It's just stating it for the record. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for that. And Craig, you would like to respond to that?
Yes, yes. I think that the wording that has been proposed is inaccurate and therefore should not be included in the minutes. I think Ken, at the time, Ken could have moved on to the next speaker after Sheila spoke, but instead he chose to ask her another question, and he told her that you are not free to use your time on this call to calumniate others on the call. And he then asked her, do you understand, yes or no? And I think Sheila had already indicated moments before that she did not react to the word calumniate, and I certainly didn't know what calumniate meant. So he said, do you understand, yes or no? And I acknowledge that the attentions, emotions were very high at this point. So, but nevertheless, the question was, do you understand? So you can't kick someone off for answering that question. Now, what I would like to do is propose an amendment to Ken's motion that I think is a compromise that I think should be acceptable. So what I would like to do, my amendment would be to replace the wording in Ken's motion, which is after she openly refused to accept this limitation of her discourse, I would like to strike that and substitute, Ken then took the position that Sheila had refused to accept this limitation of her discourse. And then we need the word and on there because what follows would be Sheila was removed from the call. So this would be, I think, accurate and fair. It would reflect that this was the position that Ken took, and as a result of the position he took, he removed her from the call. I think that is more accurate than saying she refused to basically follow his instructions.
Wish to speak against the amendment.
Okay, so first we need a second for the amendment.
Yep.
Is anyone going to second that?
I'll second it.
Second it.
Okay, so we have a second. Right. And then, Craig, are you finished speaking to it?
Well, I just basically stated it, but I guess so. Sorry, Ken, okay. Are you sighing and again? Can you stop doing that? That's like the fourth sigh tonight. So, yes, I'm fine, Cheryl, if you'd like to go to the discussion.
Okay, great. Right, Ken, you would like to respond to that?
Yes, I would. What I said to Sheila before I asked her, before I used the word Columbia, I said, you're using your time, your speaking time, to attack David. So the meaning of the word calumniate was already given. It's not a question of not understanding. It's a question of unwillingness. And that was clear on the call. Anyone who's listened to this can hear the defiance in Sheila's voice when she says no. It's very simple. I said, will you stop doing this? And she said no. It's that simple. It's not a question of taking a position. It's a question of responding to Sheila's response, period. There's no question about interpretation here. There's a question of fact. And that's all I want in the record, is the events preceding the removal from the call to the rescindment.
Okay. So right now we're discussing Craig's amendment, which would and his rewording of mm-hmm. the motion that Ken made wanting to change it. So would anyone else like to speak to Craig's amendment to that?
Yeah, I would. This is Sheila.
Okay. Sheila, go ahead.
So Ken did not actually say, will you stop or will you, and then say you only have two choices, yes or no. He said, do you understand, you only something to the effect of, you only have two choices, yes or no. I only want to hear yes or no. I do not understand why stating something that to me is an obvious fact, and is to an obvious fact to many people, would be considered an attack. I'm sure David himself would say, agree, that the idea that a large plane hit the Pentagon is in fact the government's position. That is the official story. So this is not really open to debate. Mm-hmm. And that is his main focus of his work, is proving that, and the main focus of the people that he associates with. So to say that he is not a truther, to me, is just a statement of fact, and what I don't understand is why it would be wrong to make a statement of fact. That is what I didn't understand. And that was what I was replying to when he said, do you understand? Yes or no? My answer to that is no. I don't understand.
Okay. Thank you, Sheila. Would anyone else like to speak?
Yes, I would.
Okay. James, is that you?
Yes. And I think that, that whether or not Ken's position, what he claims, is true, it is what he claims is true. Whether it's true or not, it's what he claims is true. So I think Craig's amendment is accurate. I think that it accurately describes the situation for that reason. I don't see how Ken can say that, he insists that what he claimed is true, but I don't see how he can deny that it's what he claimed to be true. You see what I mean? And that's what Craig's amendment addressed, and I think fairly and accurately.
Okay. Thank you, James. Anyone else want to speak to this?
Are we on mute?
I don't think so.
No, you're not.
Okay. I'm not actually sure if what I have to say is relevant to both the original amendment and this or not, but I'd just like to make one quick point, and that is, what is of concern to me in all of this is that I believe that Sheila's so-called defiance was totally appropriate to what I saw as a misuse of authority by Ken.
I do not believe that Ken had the authority to kick Sheila off the call without a vote. And that's the reason that I'm not sure if I just seconded a motion or made a motion, but that was the reason for the vote that brought Sheila back on.
Okay, thank you, Barbara. Anyone else like to comment?
Go ahead, please.
I just had a quick call. I don't want to get off the subject and make a big deal. My question about that whole kerfuffle, I didn't understand what David Chandler was doing on the call in the first place because he wasn't scheduled to be on there.
Good point, Bonnie. So
that's all I have to say anyway.
All right, thank you, Bonnie. Yeah. Anybody else have a comment?
Cheryl, if there's nobody else, I did want to respond to Ken's, but only after everyone else has had a chance to speak.
Okay,
very quickly,
okay.
I
won't forget you. Okay. Anyone else want to speak to it?
Yeah, this is Marty.
Craig's amendment? Yes, go ahead.
It feels like we're straying from the issue, which I think is to reflect that the minutes reflect what happened in the meeting, and I feel that we're straying way off of that. And also, if you're going to be calling, I personally remember it the way Ken's saying, but I mean, Sheila, I don't know what was in Sheila's mind, I just recall it. And I think he's probably gone back and listened to it because it's recorded if we need clarification. But anyway, if Cheryl, if you do call for a vote, could you, now that there's an amendment to the amendment, I get really confused.
Yes.
When
yes.
you go
we'll
through
clarify
the vote,
that.
So could you be really clear? Okay.
Yep,
thank
we'll
you.
Clarify okay. that. Yeah, thank you for that. Yep. Anyone else have a comment? Okay, hearing none, then.
Sheila Casey, I want to say one more thing, if I could.
Okay, yeah.
I think it might actually be a good idea for if Craig actually has has it in front of him to just read what the actual transcript says. I think Craig has it because that way there won't be any doubt about what was actually said.
Minute. You mean the transcript of what was said on the call?
That's right.
I could lay my hands on that in a moment or two if you want me to.
It sounds like there's some confusion because what Ken is now claiming is not what was in the transcript.
Well, can I give my comment and then before we sort of search for that, Sheila?
Sure.
Go ahead, Craig.
I mean, I can definitely show in the transcript that he at no time did Ken say, "Will you stop doing this?" So
I never said that, Craig. Sorry, out of order.
It's not. You don't have the floor, Ken. You just said. You just said moments ago.
Point of order.
This isn't a point of order.
Oh, you're going to just deny point of order. That's great. Yeah, that's wonderful.
Ken, what is your tell me what your point of order is.
The point of order is that I'm being misquoted here, and that's creating a misunderstanding.
That's not a point of order.
Yes, it is.
That is not a point of order. No, it's not. It's not a procedure.
Craig is making the argument that I said something, and that's why he is
going to disprove that I didn't.
I never said it. Okay,
you can respond in a moment.
Put me in the queue.
Okay. Go ahead, Craig.
I just copied it down moments ago. Will you stop doing this? Sheila said no. So I think that's exactly what she said. And in reality, you asked her a question. Do you understand this? That is not the same as saying, will you continue to insult David Chandler? Okay. In fact, you didn't even need to ask that question. You could have moved to the next person, and we wouldn't have had any of this problem.
Oh,
but you had to poke the bear one more time.
This is out of order. This is a lecture, and this is not what we're supposed to be doing right now. We're supposed to be talking about...
You're not running the call tonight, Ken.
You're right. You're right.
That's right.
Okay.
You're not.
Okay.
Because you are, Mr. McKee, you need to be civil, which means you can't abuse your time to lecture me.
I'm not.
Okay?
Ken, I told you, Ken, that you would have time to respond, so please let Craig finish. Go ahead. Craig?
Well, yeah, okay. So I think I've lost whatever train of thought I had, other than to say that all I am saying with this amendment, and it's interesting that Ken is against the amendment, because all the amendment says is that Ken took this position. And I can't imagine what could be an objection to that. Because, in fact, if what he describes as being what happened had actually happened, then he wouldn't have lost the vote and he wouldn't have been overruled. The fact that he was overruled, indicates that the other callers, the majority did not agree with his interpretation of what had just happened. So all I am saying is, and there's no reason for anybody to object to this, I'm just saying this was the position that Ken took. And that's accurate. That's what he did. He took that position, and then the other members of the call voted on it. So, anyway, that's all I have to say.
Okay. Ken, would you like to respond?
First of all, when I said that I asked Sheila would she stop, I was paraphrasing. I never was quoting myself at that point. And I think we should get the transcript out because it'll make very clear what was said and that it had that intention. Okay, fair enough. Let's do it. Let's get the transcript out and listen to it. Secondly, to say that I took the position suggests that there is controversy about whether or not that position had validity. That is not the case. I don't believe that any controversy that ensued later on had anything to do with whether Sheila took the position she took. It had to do with whether or not people wanted Sheila on the call, period. Now, I may be wrong about that, but that's my interpretation, okay? So, having said that, there are plenty of reasons why people can vote to overrule something. They don't just have to do with Craig's particular point of view about why there might have been controversy on that point. Having said that, I would appreciate it if we could simply stay with the facts. Sheila was asked if she would refrain in more or less other words. She said she would not, and she was taken off the call. It's that simple, folks. And anybody who listens to the call cannot draw any other conclusion.
Okay. Are you finished, Ken?
I'm finished.
Okay. Would anyone else like to speak to this before we vote?
Yes, this is Anne. I would like to remind people that there is a principle of forgiveness, and if that could be applied here, then we can move on to more important matters. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Anne.
Xander Arena, I'd like to say something.
Yes, go ahead, Xander.
Ken, I do differ because my interpretation was that some of the controversy was whether she understood your question or not, not so much whether or not she should be removed from the call. So in that respect, there is a counter perspective there.
Come on, Emerson, get away from that corner. Come on, Emerson.
Okay. Xander, thank you for that comment. Would anyone else like to comment?
Yes, I would. This is Sheila Casey.
Okay, Sheila.
Ken just repeated the error again, and please do not let him interrupt me. He again said that he asked me something to the effect of, will you stop talking like this? That was not the question at all. He said, I really wish that someone would pull out the transcript because essentially it is, you have two ways to answer this. I only want to hear yes or no. Do you understand? So I was given two choices. I can say yes or no. Did I understand? No, I didn't. It doesn't make any sense to me. We're a truther group. Why are we giving time to this person? So that was my answer. No, I don't. And Ken can interpret that any way he likes. But I said one word, which was no. And there could be many, you know, his interpretation is not correct. It's not what I was thinking. In fact, later in the call, when I said at one point, And when I was brought back on much later in the call, I said, well, I could tell you why I feel a certain way, but I can't. And someone said, why can't you? I said, if I do, I'll be thrown off the call. So I was limiting myself right there because I didn't want to be thrown off the call again. So I refrained from saying what I actually believed.
Okay. Thank you, Sheila. Anyone else want to comment before we vote? Okay.
Yes.
Hearing nobody. Oh, someone does?
Yeah, it's Barton Bruce. I just want to toss a couple of little things that are somehow related in here. Chris Gruner and Hamook are both extreme advocates, I guess is the simplest way of saying it, of that, I may be pronouncing it wrong, but it's a Hawaiian Ho'oponopono or something like that. You have to forgive everybody, but most especially yourself. And from Hamook's point of view, it makes you absolutely invincible in some way. But the other thing is, if we did that, it's, you know, what the hell? I mean, why not just do it? Just, you know, back off and let things be more peaceful. But the other thing is, all the time that's being spent on this may somehow come up and be relevant somewhere in the future. And a lot of stuff is getting lost. And it may have been fixed now, but when I first looked a while ago as this whole thing was breaking up and causing all the trouble, I found that 2 years of all the MPEG-3s of these calls, Craig had put up very nicely and, you know, had them nicely organized, but that's very tedious to download them. And nowadays, with huge bandwidth and disk space and other storage space being insanely cheap, if people just could make a way, the way archive.org sometimes has large collections of things you can download,
okay,
as they bit turned. Have these been saved or have they been lost? Have they been lost?
I'm going to ask you to keep your comments right now to this issue, the amendment that we're talking about.
Okay.
And then at the end, if you want to make that comment about when we're into announcements, you could do that.
Oh, okay, great. Thanks.
Okay, great. Anyone else want to speak to this, to the amendment that Craig has put out? Okay, then let's move for the vote. I'm going to try and make this clear if I can get it clear myself here. So, Ken's motion was to say he wants to replace the word subsequently with after she refused to accept the limitations of her discourse. Craig is proposing that we change what Ken wanted to substitute after she refused to accept the limitations of her discourse to Ken took the subsequent position that Sheila had refused to accept this limitation of her discourse.
There was a slight difference there, Cheryl, from what I read, from what you just read. I think I kind of tweaked it before the call, so maybe I should read what I read.
Okay, yes, go ahead.
The first time to make sure it's the same. In Ken's motion, it said, after she openly refused to accept this limitation of her discourse. And then my proposed amendment was Ken then took the position that Sheila had refused to accept this limitation of her discourse, followed by the word and. Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to take a vote. So if you vote yes, you're voting that yes, we should accept Craig's amendment to the language that Ken had proposed. If you vote no, you're saying no, we don't accept Craig's language. Is that clear to everybody? Any questions before we vote?
Yeah, I have a question. I'm totally confused because it seems to me if we vote, let's say we approve Craig's, then doesn't Ken's become moot?
Well,
yes.
You know,
can I address
yes,
that?
Go ahead.
Can I address that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. If the amendment is accepted, then that wording replaces the original wording, and then we have to approve the amended motion, which sounds like a kind of going through the motions twice for the same thing, but that is in fact what we would have to do. So
that's,
we would have to.
That's the proper order.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So is that clear, Barbara? Does that make sense?
Well, more than before.
Okay. I know. I don't always get this either.
Well,
here we go.
One thing at a time. Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so we're voting right now only on do we adopt Craig's language replacing Ken's suggested language, all right? And Craig, would you read what your language states again just one more time before we vote?
Yeah. The original motion, after she openly refused to accept this limitation of her discourse, I am proposing that be changed to Ken then took the position that Sheila had refused to accept this limitation of her discourse.
Okay, great.
So
again, if you're voting yes, you're saying you agree with Craig's proposed new language, okay? And if you no, you're against it. So, Craig, would you take the vote, please?
Yes. Xander.
Yes.
David Rold.
Yes.
David Meiswinkle. Did we lose David?
I think we might have lost him already.
Okay, Barbara.
Yes.
Bonnie.
I abstain.
Okay, Frank Tolopko.
Yes.
John O'Malley.
I think John may be gone also.
Okay. Doug West.
Abstain.
Okay. Marty Hopper.
Abstain.
Sheila Casey.
Yes.
Ann Hendricks.
Yes.
Ken Freeland.
No.
Barton Bruce.
Abstain.
Kat McGuire.
Yes.
James Hufford.
Yes.
Carl Golovin.
I think Carl is gone.
Okay. Lynn Bradbury.
I think Lynn is also gone.
Okay. And Peter Michael Ketchum?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Is there anybody whose name I didn't read who's still on the call?
Yes. Nita Renfrew.
Oh, Nita. Right. What's your vote, Nita?
I abstain.
Okay. So the yeas have it, 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7, 8, 9 to 1. So that means that this language is substituted, and now we have to vote on whether to make that change at all, or whether to keep the original wording that was already in the minutes.
Okay.
So
can you read that originally?
So we have Sheila Casey was warned by facilitator Ken Freeland not to make personal attacks after she said that Chandler is not a truther and therefore should not be heard. That sentence is the preceding one. It's not affected by the change, but just to give you an idea. Then the change sentence would be, subsequently, Sheila was removed from the call. That's the original. So the motion now would amend that to say Ken then took the position that Sheila had refused to accept this limitation of her discourse. And Sheila was removed from the call would then follow that. Does that make sense to everybody?
Yep.
Yes, it makes sense.
Can I ask a simple question, please? Does the facilitator, whether it's Ken or you or Cheryl, have the authority in our system, I hope not, to remove somebody unilaterally from the call without a vote?
Point of order.
That's a different question.
Yeah.
It sure is. That's way out there.
Ken, please. Okay. Barbara, if you can hang on to that question until we're done voting on this, and then if you'd want to address it, we can. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. All right. So does anyone want to make any comments before we vote on this or just get the vote done?
This is Kat McGuire. I would.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead, Kat.
I'm just wondering for historical sake, and I don't want to muck this up. We can go forward, but what would be the problem of just having two versions of the reality and showing what the votes are so that we don't, like, completely obliterate what some people's reality was, but it shows what most people think the reality was?
Well, I think Craig's language kind of addresses that in a way, but I don't think we can have two sets of minutes.
It'll be in there anyway because we'll have to say in the next minutes that, you know, what was there and what it was changed to, and so it'll all have to be mentioned.
For posterity. as long as that's there for posterity. Okay. Thank you for clarifying that.
Okay.
Okay. Anyone else want to speak to this before we vote? Okay. Hearing none, then let's take a vote again. So, again, if you're voting yes, you're voting that we adopt the new language instead of keeping the original in the minutes. Okay.
Do we want to just do a yay or nay, Cheryl? Do we want to just call for the yays and nos
sure,
just without doing it?
Okay.
Well, if it's an obvious result, then you can.
Okay. Okay, so all of those in favor, then get ready to vote. All of those in favor, say yay.
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 Okay, and all of those opposing this, say nay.
Nay.
Okay, so the yays have it, and so the minutes will be changed to the new language that was voted for. Okay. Okay, great. So now,
may I ask my question now?
Yes, go ahead, Barbara.
So I'd like to know on what grounds affirmatively does what are the rules about our moderator? Does a moderator have unilateral authority? Have we ever agreed to that? I certainly didn't. To remove anyone from the call without a vote. I remember that we've always had votes when we remove someone from the call.
Right. That was my memory also.
Yeah.
And I think
I'd like to respond to it.
You can hang on a minute, Ken. I'm talking, and when I'm done, then you can.
I heard somebody else talking. Go ahead.
Okay. So, Barbara, that's been where we're working on guidelines so we can clarify all of that. But we do the past done is vote on it. So.
Okay.
All right. Well, let me restate it. What was the understanding of people in this group on the day that that Ken removed Sheila without a vote?
I'll let others speak.
Can I please speak to this issue or no?
Ken, hang on a minute. Barbara has the floor, and when she's done,
well, she just asked another question. Somewhere.
Well, I'd like to know what everyone who wants to answer.
Well, I'm one of everyone,
answers
okay.
that question. I understand that, Ken. I'm just saying that I personally.
I understand your question. I'm wanting to respond to it.
Okay, so hang on a moment, Ken.
You interrupt people.
Okay. Barbara, I think you have some background noise going on there. If you are on speakerphone, maybe.
It sounds like a speakerphone. Shut your speakerphone off and just pick up your handset.
But it's not me.
Oh, okay. All right. It's showing up under your name here. But okay. So Barbara would like to hear from people. Ken, why don't you go first and let her know your opinion, and then we can hear from others.
Sure. Here's the deal. Barbara, when we've had consultations in the past to remove somebody, it wasn't to remove somebody from a single call. It was to remove somebody from the teleconference. That's a pretty big difference, okay? Under these circumstances, we had already lost a whole lot of time over what I consider a rather senseless controversy that could have easily been handled with a little grace, but unfortunately there wasn't any to be had. And therefore, it was my position that because Sheila was unwilling to say no, she would not in the future continue to make her attacks on David, that the quickest way to resolve the problem was to simply remove her from that call. I can't remove her from the teleconference by myself, but I could take her off of a call where she's refusing to accept what I have always understood to be a fundamental principle of teleconference participation. Now, you know, that's a debatable point, but that was my call, okay?
No, but that's my very question. Where was our understanding as a group that any moderator had that authority on a single call? I don't see that.
Mm-hmm. Well, sure.
Would anyone else like to address that?
Well, I would just jump in and just to say, just to echo what Cheryl said, which is that, you know, we are going to put together some guidelines and seek out the feedback of people on the call and try to arrive at something that will be workable and agreeable to everyone, and just so that we don't have kind of questions like this come up where where people have different understandings or different beliefs about what can be done or what should be done. So hopefully we can solve this problem so that it doesn't happen again.
Okay, well, I may not get an answer to my question, but I wanted to know what people thought the rule was, the authority of the chair or the moderator was then, and I'm not getting an answer.
So
I think
Barbara,
it was unclear.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gray zone. That's an answer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Great. So now that brings us to the David Rolls' motion to change the wording of the minutes of the March meeting. And that has been seconded already. And so, David, would you like to speak to that again? Is David on the call still?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. Okay.
Okay, great.
Okay, so last month we had Jason Burmes talk about Dark Overlord, and the current minutes describe this in positive terms and don't reflect that that people express concerns about it. So I wanted to amend the minutes to add the concerns. So I wrote up a proposed change while I was listening to the last conversation. So should I read?
Yes, yeah, please read it. Yeah, thanks, David.
Should I read the current version too, or what?
Why don't you? Yeah, if you want to read the current and then what you'd like to change it to.
Okay, so right now it says "Dark Overlord" in bold. And then the paragraph starts, Jason Burmes, who we first heard about because of his collaboration with Dylan Avery on Loose Change, brought us up to date on the hacking efforts of a group calling itself Dark Overlord, which has in its possession documents that could be of great interest to the 9/11 truth movement. Videos on the topic can be found at, and then there's three links to YouTube videos. So I'd like to add a paragraph in the middle. So I'd like to leave the description that up to it could be of great interest to the 9/11 truth movement, and then start a new paragraph. So here's my paragraph would be, other people on the call express concerns that the Dark Overlord documents are disinformation from an anonymous source asserting that Saudis and Pakistanis were involved in perpetrating 9/11. The concern is that Dark Overlord supports aspects of the official story blaming Muslims, including alleged Saudi hijackers for 9/11. That's the paragraph I want to insert. And then we would have a third paragraph, videos on the topic can be found at with the videos links.
Okay. So would anyone else like to speak to the changes David is suggesting?
I would, Barb.
Yeah,
okay,
Craig
Barb.
As well.
Yeah, David, would you have any problem with the minutes reflecting that was your position and not more generally?
I have no problem with that. The reason I didn't put my name in is because I haven't had time to listen to the archived version to hear who the other speaker or two were who like agreed with my concerns.
Uh-huh.
Or expressed similar concerns. But I don't have any problem putting names in.
I see. So that's why you used some of. I understand.
Yeah, because it wasn't just me. Somebody else said it was disinformation. I didn't actually use the word disinformation in my comments. I just said it seemed to be supporting the official story about the Saudi hijackers, you know. So.
Right. Okay. Thanks for the clarification. Okay. Thank you, Barb. Craig?
Yeah. I guess my concern about this is, that it sets a certain precedent, because in fact there are a lot of presentations, I think, that you could say that raise alarm from some people on the call. I mean, I could certainly point to a number of past presentations that I had serious issues with, and I'm probably not the only one that could say that. So I'm a little bit concerned about registering this kind of concern for one particular item if we're not going to do it all the time, because the minutes are really just supposed to record kind of the basics of what happened on the call, not so much to get into chronicling people's opinions about what they heard. Certainly, and I would say I didn't certainly want this item to come off sounding positive. I guess I just tried to make it sound kind of neutral. So I would just raise that concern that it sets a precedent. What happens if we do another presentation next month and somebody says, well, I think that was, you know, full of crap. I want that reflected in the minutes. We're going to be doing that a lot. So that's my concern. If we do do this, then I would certainly want to indicate in the minutes that this had been added as a result of a vote rather than just kind of slipping it in there. I think that would be important. But anyway, I would urge caution on this, I guess.
Okay. So would anyone else like to speak to David's motion?
Yes, I would. Can you hear me? This is Sherry Aspen in San Diego.
Yeah, Sherry, go ahead.
I've been on the call for a while. You guys couldn't hear me for some reason, so I was on my way driving home. And anyway, I agree with him. I was one of the other people that had a concern about that, Dark Lord. I did not use the word disinformation either, but I did have a concern, so... That's all I have to say. And then I'm on the call. I just wanted to let you know.
Okay, thanks, Sherry. All right. Anyone else would like to speak to this?
Yeah, Xander would like to say something.
Okay. Go ahead, Xander.
And that's just, whether it's disinformation or not, the information is technically of interest to the truth community. And I think the minutes reflect that. And whether Saudis were on the airplanes or not, they are, in fact, the alleged hijackers. So bringing them up is, I don't see where there's a problem with that.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else?
Okay. May I speak? This is Kat.
Yeah, go ahead, Kat.
I agree with Craig that it is a concern, and I'm not quite sure. And yeah, I like the idea of opinions there, but what has been the past? Have these notes? I'm trying to remember. Have these notes been editorialized, or are they more? Here's the straight facts. I like the idea of opinions there, but I'm also concerned that subjective note taking, if it goes towards opinions, might be too subjective. And so I'm concerned about just neutrality being there, even though I like opinions, but how can we make sure that they are properly annotated as opinions of some? So if we vote on what David has, part of me likes that, but part of me also likes what Craig is saying. I'm wondering how we could maybe have a compromise of the two.
I have an idea, Barb.
Okay, Barb?
Yeah, I'm not sure it's going to solve this particular one, but my first request, and you know, I'd like to hear if anybody doesn't like the idea, but as we're working out guidelines to come back to the group for discussion before they'd be finalized, I think it would be a good idea to have some guidelines on what does and does not go in minutes. To give you an example, I'm an officer and a secretary of the Lawyers Committee. There are only 8 of us on the board. I take the minutes. And we have a rule that the minutes are only supposed to reflect facts, for instance, you know, what's in the bank account and the actual wording of a vote and what the vote was and whether it passed. Who voted for it, who voted against, and whether it passed. So mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's all our minutes should reflect now or in the future, but I do think the guidances that you're working on, it will help in the future too. Try to propose what should be in the minutes. And my last comment is, even though I share the concern, I think I'm going to vote against this particular one for the reasons that Craig gives. It sets a bad precedent. And besides, we have the recordings.
Mm-hmm.
Good point.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. And Barbara, thank
David,
you for that.
Can I say one? I'm sorry.
Yeah, David, go ahead.
Okay, well, the Craig's original draft I think that it's presenting Jason Burmese's opinion as a fact. It says, Dark Overlord, which has in its possession documents that could be of great interest to the 9/11 truth movement. And that's like presenting Jason Burmese's opinion that these are real documents as a fact, and his opinion that they're real documents that we should be interested in as a fact. And that's what I'm objecting to. Like, somebody who doesn't listen to the call, wasn't on the call, and just reads these minutes is going to think that we generally agree that Dark Overlord is for real, and these are like real documents that we should be interested in.
Could I respond to Cheryl?
Yeah, go ahead, Craig. Yep.
I think if that's the concern, I mean, I say that could be of interest. I don't say that are of interest. You're right, however, that I do sort of take for granted that they have documents. And if that's the concern, that they may not have, and documents doesn't mean official documents. So I don't think I'm claiming that any authenticity of the documents. I'm just saying documents. If that's a concern, then I would say may have documents. If you want to make that amendment, I wouldn't oppose that. But I think I was trying to be pretty neutral by saying they could have documents that could be of interest. So I just a suggestion, maybe, you know, may have documents would be an improvement.
Well, there's no evidence that they have documents except from this anonymous Dark Lord itself and from Jason Burmese accepting their assertion, you know?
Well, we can do what we did with the other issue and just say that this was the position that, you know, Jason says that, you know, I don't mind attributing it to him. I don't mind that. Then it becomes, this is what Jason is saying.
Oh, could you do that? That'll solve a problem.
Well, yeah. That'll solve the problem.
David, does that solve the problem for you?
Yeah, that would solve the, well, I mean, I'd still rather express the concerns, but that would be better than the current version, yeah.
Okay, so should we vote on whether to put in what David has suggested, or, Craig, are you going to make a motion to amend it to what you just said and vote on that, or?
I'm not going to make an emotion. I'm just going to suggest it to David and sort of see if he's okay with it. It'd be nicer to sort of agree, reach a consensus on this if we can.
This is Nita.
So
can
I'm just
going to
see
something?
If that's.
Can I say something?
Nita, here.
Yeah, Nita, go ahead.
You know, somebody said that whether they're real or not, they would be of interest to us, and I think that's true. Even if they were all fake documents, they would still be of interest to know about. And I think it goes without saying, if you listen to the recording, that it's the person who, I don't remember what his name was, who made the presentation. That's his opinion. I mean, it doesn't at all infer that it's our opinion.
Right.
I think it does. It doesn't say what the information is. It just says they have information, and then it has links to the actual, like, YouTube videos, which I assume contain this information. And so we're, like, promoting this information as if, like, we think it's real information.
But I wouldn't read it that way.
The current minute.
I wouldn't read it that we were promoting it as real information. I would read it as it's information out there that we're looking at.
I'd also like to say something about this. I've listened to several of Jason's radio or podcasts about this, and he criticizes the Dark Overlords. He doesn't like how they're handling things, what they're doing, but he's just saying that these documents may be of interest, and so he's looking at them, and not many people are. So, but he doesn't endorse them.
I mean, it's of interest to us to look at them.
Right.
How could it not be?
Because they're like imaginary documents that like just support the official story that like Saudi hijackers.
Well, aren't we interested in knowing what the official story is? I mean, you know, come on, aren't we?
Well,
aren't we interested in knowing
this,
what
like,
people are doing?
This conference in Denver should be of interest to us too.
Well, I'm interested in those documents.
Well, it is. It's of interest to me. Right.
I'm watching it very closely.
let's get back on track here.
Well, yeah, it's of interest because it's disinformation, and but we're not allowed to say that some of us think it's disinformation.
Well, I'm interested in what the disinformation is.
Well, that's fine, but then we have to say that might be our interest in it.
Anything could be disinformation. I mean,
but the
thing
is,
labeling things, you know.
Yeah, the call is kind of where the discussion and the views are exchanged. So you're completely wide open, free to call something disinformation on the call. The minutes is just supposed to reflect what happened. Like, that's one of the first things you read when you read about how minutes are prepared. It's not what was said, it's what happened on the call. So, you know, if you, the presentation was given, a motion was made, you know, this happened, that happened. It's not really about what did
okay,
people
well
think
then
about what happened.
How about we shorten it to Jason Burmes, who we first heard about because of his collaboration with Dylan Avery on Loose Change, brought us up to date on the hacking efforts of a group calling itself Dark Overlord, period, and leave out that last clause about hazardous possession documents that could be of great interest.
I make that amendment.
Who's that?
Barbara.
Barbara, okay. Thank you, Barb. Okay. So,
that's okay with me.
Okay, so do we need to vote on that, or are we all in agreement?
Well, are there any? You could see if there's any objections.
Yeah. Are there any objections to the way David just worded it?
Well, I think it should be less the way it was because, you know, the minutes just reflect what happened.
This is Barton. Can I say something?
Yes. Are you done, Nita?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. All right, Ruth or Barton?
Sure. I've been through, and there's probably been a lot I've missed, but you know, the Dave Schlesinger ouster and you know, the other one, Wayne Costi, and things like that. And we spent a phenomenal amount of time spinning our wheels. And if someone outside were coming into our group and trying to mess us up so we were less productive, having these kinds of things is a great way to do it. And if you haven't seen the Al Jazeera, the lobby videos, the UK one and the United States version, you need to see it. A very small team can really do work wonders in trashing all kinds of other things going on. We have the MPEG-3s, which I started to say earlier.
Barton, please stop for a moment. We're addressing right now this particular amendment, and probably most of us could not agree with you more on what you're saying, but we are addressing this amendment, and when we're done with this...
I object to being accused of trying to like, sabotage this group. I'm not trying to do that. I'm just, like, proposing an amendment to the minutes, and then we'll vote on it, and that'll be over, you know, so...
I proposed an amendment to do what you suggested, and all we need is a second, and we can have a voice vote.
Okay, well, I second.
Good.
Okay.
Good, we can vote.
All right, would anyone like to speak to either of us to the new proposed amendment, or just take a vote? Anyone like to speak to it?
Just clarify it, please.
Yeah, so we keep the current minutes, but we strike that there's a clause that goes, which has in its possession documents that could be of great interest to the 9/11 truth movement. We strike that clause out. We remove it.
Right.
Okay. So that's what we're voting on. Everyone clear on that? So if you vote yay, you're voting to keep that new language where we drop that part that David just mentioned and insert. Well, no, we're just dropping that in, yes. And
no, nothing just inserted, just cut.
No, we're just dropping that one clause. That's it.
Just dropping that clause. Okay.
Yes.
So, again, Craig, do you think we need a voice vote or an individual vote?
I think we could try a voice one and see if it's obvious the result.
Okay. So all in favor of this new amendment, vote yay.
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 Yes.
Yay.
Okay. And all in opposed, nay?
Nay.
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 Better do a
that's pretty
call.
Close. I think. Yeah, I think we
need
to.
I think we need a vote. Okay.
Okay. Xander.
I'm going no on this one.
David obviously is a yes because he seconded it, and Barbara's a yes because she proposed it. Bonnie, are you still there? Frank. John O'Malley. It's only going to be the diehards, I guess, that are going to vote on that. The keeners. Okay.
The night owls.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
I'm just waking up myself. Marty?
Not here.
Not here. Sheila? Boy,
not
there's nobody here.
Ann is here.
I'll abstain.
Are you there, Ann?
I'll abstain.
Okay. Ken?
I think Ken is gone.
Okay. Barton?
Nay.
Okay. Kat?
Abstain.
James? I guess James gone too.
James is gone, yeah.
Lynn?
Yep. Who was that you just said?
Lynn Bradbury?
Gone.
Peter?
No.
Sorry, did you say no?
No.
No, okay. Nita?
No.
No. Okay. Did I miss anybody?
Just yes, yourself. Sherry. Oh, and Sherry.
Yes. Sherry voted yes. I'm gonna vote no. So that just leaves Cheryl if we need her vote. Okay, so that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3. So it's defeated.
So the original language.
The original language.
My original proposal to add the extra paragraph.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Then we vote on my original proposal to add the extra paragraph since the amendment didn't pass.
Right, right. You're right. You're right. Because we voted no on the amended one, but now we have to vote on your original proposal. Okay. Okay. Does anyone else want
to read it again? Yeah.
Yeah, does anyone else want to speak to his original proposal again, or should we just take the vote? What would
I have to be reminded of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so, David, I'm sorry to have to ask you this again, but could you read your language, your original language?
Sure. So I want to insert an additional paragraph, like before it says video on the topic can be found, and the paragraph will be, other people on the call expressed concerns that the Dark Overlord documents are disinformation from an anonymous source asserting that Saudis and Pakistanis were involved in perpetrating 9/11. The concern is that Dark Overlord supports aspects of the official story blaming Muslims, including alleged Saudi hijackers, for 9/11.
Okay. So if anyone voting yay is supporting that new language, is that clear to everybody? Okay, so let's take a voice vote and see if we can get it done with that. So everyone in favor of that new language, please say yay.
Yay.
Yay. Yay.
Okay, and anyone opposing that language, please say nay.
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 Nay. I think we have to do a voice of an individual one again. Yeah, okay.
Indeed. Xander?
No.
Okay, I'm going to say no. David, you're a yes, obviously. Barbara?
No.
Frank?
Gone.
Oh, he's gone, too. Okay. Sheila?
Gone.
Ann?
Abstain.
Barton?
Yay.
Kat?
Abstain.
James? We lost James?
Yes, James is gone.
James is gone. Peter?
No.
Nita?
No.
Okay, so the no's have it for 4-2. 5-2.
You forgot me.
Oh, I'm sorry, Sherry. Yes.
Okay, I vote yes.
Okay, so 5-3, so it's defeated, 5-3.
Okay, so it's defeated, 5-3. Okay, so David, I want to thank you for thinking about that and wanting to do that, and
and I appreciate that you took the time to do that. Thank you. And I'm sorry it's defeated, so the language will remain as it is in the March minutes. And does anyone want to continue on with our agenda, or do we just want to, it's already after 11, should we call it a night? And
I have a quick comment. I don't want any answers. I just have a quick comment. If there's anyone, I'm interested in what Ken Jenkins told, I think it was Bonnie, about people need to be updated on the research, and all the plane came up out of the pit. So in the future, maybe emails or whatever, if somebody who knows him could contact him and ask him where he got that information, I'd be interested in that. So if anybody personally knows him instead of me trying to reach out and get
yes,
that.
Yes, Nita, this is Bonnie. I'll ask him.
Thank you. Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Barb and I are going to see him in a week anyway.
Great, right, yeah.
Yeah, lucky us. Mm-hmm. Lucky us.
Yeah, have fun.
Okay, so that's what you guys will report back on that. Great. Any other comments or anything before we call it a night here?
Can I just make one?
Well, I would like to remind people of my... What?
Okay. I think, Barton, yeah, you had something on the table you wanted to talk about, and Barton,
yes,
you had a comment. Barton,
let me tell you about Ken Jenkins. Ken Jenkins and the MOOC were the co-founders of the 9/11 Truth thing, and they're both PhDs, and they're both very bright, but they have slightly radically different lifestyles, and so I don't think the MOOC speaks to them much, if at all, these days, but they certainly know each other very, very well. That's just a wise-ass comment.
Who are you talking about? Who are you talking about?
Ken Jenkins and the MOOC.
Oh, Hamook. Yeah.
Heavy-duty PhDs.
So,
Hamook was an instrumented underground nuclear test, and he was a Star Wars weapons system scientist at Lawrence Livermore National Labs, and God only knows what else, and Q clearance.
Barton, yep. Did you have something else you wanted to talk about?
Yes, absolutely. The MP3s are important, and I see they've been, Craig has moved 2 years worth of them. Maybe he's moved more now, but if they're being lost because they're not on the same website anymore, something should be done to make sure these things don't get lost. There's a lot of probably good videos and lots of other documentation that scholars in the future may still want to dig back through and should be available. It doesn't cost much to keep them. But having them downloadable individually is a real pain. Bandwidth is cheap. Large disks are cheap. And what a lot of people do will do a zip file or something which compresses them slightly, not MP3 so much, but anyway, and you download a year. You know, so it's one click, bang. And if you use BitTorrents, you can download, like I was just doing an 80 gigabyte one from WikiLeaks the other day just for amusement, and you just click start it, and you just wait, and however many hours or days it takes, it's there when it's finished. And it's all automatic. Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! You can always get by BitTorrent every day. It's very automatic, and once you just click and down, you get it, and that's the way you get all the big WikiLeaks.
What are you talking about?
About
click
the technology
play.
To distribute things, so you don't have to go click on every MP3 for every
Martin, what did you say the
thing.
Name of it was? Bit something? Bit what?
I'm very technical and things like that. It's not more than it needs here, but it's a small file that is easily mailable. And
what's it called?
The torrent protocol is called BitTorrent. It's peer-to-peer networking. And
how are you spelling the last part of that?
TORRENT.
Torrent, yeah.
Oh, BitTorrent.
BitTorrent, yes. There are many separate tools that all use the same protocol, and they can all talk to each other. I happen to use one called BitComet, which is a Chinese thing, and only works on, well, it doesn't work on all platforms, but you know, it's a well-established protocol. It works well. It's all over the place. As I point out, Amy Goodman's things are available that way every day that she's on, and that kind of thing.
But that's a way
to let people get huge amounts of stuff with a few clicks. And if they don't want it, they don't have to. But it's very easy to do.
Right. But, Barton, I'm trying to understand why you're mentioning this at all. Is it for Craig's use?
There's only 2 years. Maybe Craig's put more now. But I saw that he transferred from where Ken had them. And there were only 2 years of MPEG-3s. Of this conference call, the one we're talking about right now. And are there more coming, or are they all lost, or if they're about not lost and about to be lost, please let's do something to contain about
them. No, Ken is going to keep archived there all the ones that he was the moderator of. But we're also moving them, so they should be in two places,
is my understanding. Yes, that's good, but I'm also pleading for something other than just MPEG-3s. If you have the yearly collection as a zip or a RAR file, any kind of a compression, but zips one that everybody can use.
Craig, do you have any response to that or thoughts on that?
I'm not as technical as you are or as technical as the average person walking down the street, I think. So I really have no idea how to do that. I just know how to do it one at a time, which is what I've been doing. And it was my intention to just keep going until I got all the way back to the beginning.
You had this little line, section for each one, and the little description or something, and then the download. Can I just talk to you offline? Don't want to drag everybody else through this.
Yeah. Let's touch base on that. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, thanks, Barton. Okay.
It's bulk, quick, and those who choose to have the whole collection can just get it, whether they use it or not, but then you get distributed copies all over the place.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
I had a comment.
Yeah.
Shall I go ahead?
Yeah,
I just want to remind people it was pushed off to the end and we never got to it, and now people are gone, but I think our movement doesn't want to lose the momentum in New York City. Right now, there's no event planned. So we need a champion. I've been that for the last 2 years.
Okay. Some of the people from New York maybe can think about that. I also want to announce to people that in June 7th, 8th, and 9th in Hartford, Connecticut, they're having a Red Tech Expo, which Richard Gage will be speaking at. And others. So if anyone's interested in that. And then Richard Gage will actually be speaking at the University of Hartford, another event that we're putting together for him on Sunday evening of that weekend. So
I'd like to make an announcement about our dear friend Richard. He is getting married, bless his soul, on June 23rd.
Great.
Yeah. So all good wishes to him and Gail.
I have a question. I was wondering if I could ask a question. Is anyone Is anyone from our group going to that May 4th thing in Colorado, or is everyone just staying away? I just wondered.
Yeah, you didn't get in on the first part of the call. That was my whole presentation. Bonnie Faulkner and I are going.
Okay, thank you. Bless you for that. That's really great that you're doing that. We'll be with you in spirit.
We'll be reporting, don't worry. That's what we do.
Yeah, thank you guys for doing that. Okay, any other announcements or comments before we call it a night? Okay, go ahead.
Well, just that Netanyahu is naming a new Golan Heights settlement after Donald Trump.
That's so outrageous.
Oh, my God.
That's rich, isn't it? Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So, thank you.
Say one thing. Next week, we're going to have Ted Muga, who's a pilot and an engineer, and we'll have Ginger Gaynor next month on the call. So if you guys think of all of your pilot questions, because they're going to be there to answer them for you.
Oh, you mean they're the speakers next month? Next month?
Yeah, next month is Ted Muga and Ginger, who you were talking about, Ginger here from San Diego 911 too.
I know Ginger well. I've stayed at her house. That's great. Okay.
It's May 29th, and there'll be Ted Muga and Ginger, she just heard, and then Craig will be presenting, and also Lawrence Fine on a 5-minute presentation. So that's what's for next month, yeah. So anything else? Excellent. Well, all right. Great, everyone. Thank you for a lively call, and we'll see you all next month.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.